I'm not ready.
No, you can stop.
It seems to be cooling off a little bit. Was anybody else warm or was it just
me? I was warm.
It's hot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're going to try this. We're going to try this new app that I just downloaded as I sit here. Let's see what it says. Well, that isn't right.
Okay. I'd like to call the joint meeting of Ways and Means, and I don't know the title of your.
Yeah, I'll call the joint meeting of Public Works, Capital Projects, and Transportation.
So, if we're going to just go through each of the projects sort of in order of the book. If we're going to skip over, unless there's something that substantial changes, if it's already been approved and has a project number, we'll skip over it. But if it does have some substantial changes or anything that you feel we should know about, please chime in with it. Otherwise, and if anybody wants to talk about a specific one, any of the members here, please jump in. But otherwise, we'll just go through them quickly, and hopefully this won't be a 3-4-hour meeting. All right.
I'm going to have this open before they get a chance.
The first one to start.
John, if you wouldn't mind, just yell the page.
Oh, I'm
just
going to
get there. Skip over it first.
Page 34.
We're going to skip over ones that are. All right, so it's page 55, Planning Board Broadband Initiative. Like to give us a summary?
Want me to do it? No, I'm just kidding.
This is a Dennis thing?
It is, but let me get there.
We can skip to the next one and go back.
I think he is.
He's right on time.
Broadband, start talking.
Broadband, he hit the ground running.
So, Dennis, you're up.
Page 55, your broadband is the
capital. That's okay.
Just give us a summary of it.
What? Summary of the broadband.
Okay, it's designed to essentially try to figure out where we have and don't have broadband. And then we were looking at providing funding to essentially put broadband on existing towers, but they all point to multi-point. And we were looking at the towers that were going to be built in the public safety radio system. Does that help?
Yeah. So can you just, so when you say the first is figure out what we have and don't have, don't we know that already?
We have a pretty good idea, and it's not as bad as it was. So you're looking at essentially the areas that we're most concerned about is in the area around Wawarsing, in the western part of Wawarsing, and also in the areas of the Catskills.
Sorry. I'm going to say this now, but I kind of feel this way for almost every single one of them. But it would be very helpful to know, and maybe this is somewhere and I'm missing it because this is 325 pages, but like the thought of how much we need, what percentage we hope to achieve in year one, what percentage we would hope to achieve in year two, what percentage we would hope, like, so that we have this broader picture of, like, in 5 years we'll have 100% of our broadband needs taken care of, and how this is the incremental process that will get us there, or in 5 years we hope to have 50%. Sure. But yeah, that.
So after we put this in, we now have additional information that came down from the state. And we've also been working with the controller's office with respect to this. So we have additional mapping data that's out there. So we now know from that mapping data exactly where we don't have service. And we also know that the state is looking at providing funding through what they call the Bill of the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, additional funding associated with broadband. So we're now of the opinion that there's less than about 2,000 or 2,500 structures in the county that don't have broadband. So we're looking at those areas and where those areas match up where we have towers, proposed towers.
I'll just add that on page 56, if you go down a little bit, it has the year-by-year breakout as far as cost. So the first 100,000 was going to be the consultant kind of finding the where. That can probably get moved forward a little bit. The other 2 years were actually building out the infrastructure.
Right. So, I mean, I study that, and that's how we always had it. I guess what I was hoping for, and like I said, for this one and for probably every single one of them almost, is especially something like this, which is a build out, a development of our broadband, is really knowing, having these benchmarks and these goal points where we know that, just similar to the green fleet, like, you know, what percentage are we hoping to be, so that we really can look and say, have we hit the mark with broadband? Have we converted 20% of them by the end of this year? How many are left? So that, you know, so that it's not just the dollar amount, but like, I don't know how far at the end of this year we've achieved our goal, because I don't know what our goal actually is. And so anything like that, where it's going to be enhancing broadband, improving fleets, doing, you know, I would love to have an idea of what's the five-year goal and how much is this year one going to get us towards there.
So my sense would be is that we would anticipate that we would be able to build out somewhere in the neighborhood of about three to 5 years for all of them.
Which is how many?
Which is, it depends on the number of towers I have to build, but we're looking at towers in the Shandaken area and towers in the Rosendale area. And so what we may do in those areas, we may not use broadband to do underserved areas. We may use broadband to do areas that essentially don't have competition. So we may do that. And the other thing that we're looking at, the reason we're also looking at broadband, is the ability to essentially provide additional work that if there is an emergency, that we can move broadband into those areas that have outages and need broadband that's not landline control. We found out some of these issues may exist when we look at our availability, for example, of our ability to talk to certain places, hospitals, schools, etc., during an emergency situation, and that would be standing up broadband on existing towers to ensure the towers would support them.
So I appreciate that. I guess, again, I'll just say I'm looking for metrics of success. What is a metric of success? What does that look like so that we know whether we've achieved it? Ooh. And what I don't need it now. I'm just saying that it would be very helpful to know what our goals are for something like that. And it could be a percentage of our population that has access. If it's not actual, does it make sense to refer to how many towers? It might make sense if, and I don't need it numbers now, but like if 40, the comptroller did a study, right? If we know this percentage of people don't have access, then what percentage do we think will have access? You know, so that's all.
1% of structures in Ulster County are not served.
It's a lot more ubiquitous than we thought originally when the work was done, and it's confirmed by the work that was done by the controller and working with the towns in mapping this out, and it's also confirmed by the work that was just recently completed by the state, which mapped it out for individual structures. So we now have individual structures mapped out at the state level, which show the areas that the structures in the county that don't have broadband, and we now have a road-by-road look at from the controller's work in terms of the segments of roads that don't have broadband. And it's much more ubiquitous than we thought it was going to be when we started the work. So now you're looking at this essentially trying to make sure that you're building towers for your public safety radio system that can support broadband, with the idea that we may stand it up or we may not stand it up depending upon how fast other segments move. And the other segments move may actually be installing landlines instead of essentially doing point-to-multipoint grab broadband.
Okay, so we have, you know, a lot of private companies, especially Archtop, right, that's moved into the area that plans on doing a very similar thing in the private sector, right? And we also have other providers that, you know, will play in this field, right? So my question is, will you work in conjunction with them, especially Archtop, because they're ready to go, right? And they're going to be, you know, not that everybody needs what they're going to be supplying, but you know, they have capital to invest in a project like this. And so my question would be, is when you do the study or the project, I guess, when you create the project, will you be including some private sector folks to see what their plans are so we're not replicating what they're doing?
Yes, is a short answer.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I need then.
I think I'm kind of going to be asking the same kind of question as Legislator Walter, where even when it comes to the budget, year after year, we ask for more specifics. So at the end of the year, beginning of next year, we can look and say, did we achieve what we were setting out to do? And I think what I heard you asking for is what I'm kind of asking for is, all right, if we hope to have this much done in 5 years, I understand we're still the initial stage, so it might be a little harder to do, but I'd love to see, we'd love to have towers in these three locations. We'd like to be worked out in these towns. We'd like to have this done and this done by year one, by year two. This is where we hope to be, but we don't always get that. It's a little more general and less specific. And if this was a private company, I'm pretty sure they'd be sitting before their board of directors and letting them know year by year where they hope to be logistically, physically, logistically. And we're not getting that to a point. Am I correct? That's more or less, yeah, that's how I feel.
So one of the things that we can tell you is that Motorola is finishing up its design for the system, particularly in the mountainous areas of the county. When that design finishes up, we'll have proposed tower locations. Then we'll go back and look at those tower locations in terms of buildability and constructability. We're going to go out for an RFP for that consultant work to do that work. We're currently in the process of appearing before we finish the tower in Saugerties. We're currently in the process of appearing for the town of Olive's town board with respect to the improvements on Tonchi Mountain, which is a change in that tower height from 80 feet to 120 feet. And we're looking at a site at Saugerties, and we've reached out to both the town of Marbletown and the town of Rosendale with respect to their lands associated with the office facility that they now own in Cottage Hill as a potential site for that tower. So we know where we're going to go in two locations, and the other three locations we're waiting for our people that are doing the work on our radio system to make sure that we have the tower-to-tower talk that we need to do in order to roll that system out. We need to finish that system at the same time that we finish the government operations center, because they're tied together.
If I could just real quick, I mean, this is a different type of project than many of our other projects. We don't normally live in the broadband field, right? So a lot of this is coordinating, putting the towers where other private companies, to Legislator Cahill's point, can actually put their equipment and serve those last mile service or whatever the last few people are. So it's harder for us to tell you. I hear what you're saying on the Green Fleet and other capital projects where you want a more specific, like what percentage of the project will be done by year two, year three, year four. This one's a little bit different because we're just kind of coordinating and we're using ARPA funds to do something we normally don't do.
So the description for phase one is the design phase, that's what it says right now, so that's for 2023. Is there an expectation that any of that will be through federal or other grants or other?
The towers themselves can get constructed relative to the public safety radio system grants, and that's in a different capital project.
Okay, but in terms of the design, not the construction, the design, that's expected to be all county?
No, the design work relative to what you're trying to do is you're going to design a tower to meet your public safety radio system needs. You're going to look at the loading on that tower to make sure the tower can support broadband.
Mm-hmm.
And then what you're trying to do is stand up the broadband if there's a need for that broadband in that particular area. So that's what we're doing.
And will this, I mean, are we proposing to handle the full 1% of?
No.
No.
No, no, not
even
in any way, shape, or form. No, mainly because where we need towers for public safety radio, we don't necessarily need it for broadband, A. And B is, it may actually be better and cheaper using federal money and state money that's coming out from under the bill, what they call the bill or the Infrastructure Investment Job Act, to do the last mile landline rather than the last mile point to multipoint.
And are we working on that right now? I mean, are we getting ahead? Basically, I'm wondering, are we getting ahead of the curve? Because I'm expecting there's going to be a certain level of competitiveness to
this process?
The short answer is yes.
Okay.
And I was going to ask how this would affect issues that we're encountering in many areas with cell phone coverage.
Oh, great question. Absolutely great question. And from our perspective, the need for cell phone coverage, particularly in the mountainous areas, is more acute than the need for broadband. And when you look at, and we now have mapping that shows the extent of cell phone coverage within the county. When you look at that mapping, and our thanks to our Information Services Department and the Controller's Office, when you look at that mapping, what it shows is that when you get west of Phoenicia, you literally have no service whatsoever. There's not any carrier up there right now that has cell phone service. So our priority with respect to some of our towers is actually cell phone rather than broadband.
I was specifically referring to like the area, like say along 209 in Hurley.
Different issue with respect to those areas, and that issue has to do with the type of cell phone coverage that's available. As we move to 5G versus 3G and 4G, the issue that comes up with that is that they need more line of sight, and they're not as robust because of the type of data that they handle. So you start seeing dead zones pop up where you didn't have the dead zones before. Really interesting thing, not that you're interested, but the town of Woodstock in its infinite wisdom is going to probably try to zone out 5G locations within the community by basically telling the cell phone carriers if you have 3G or 4G coverage, you're not allowed to build more towers in order to get 5G coverage.
Anybody else? So how are we planning on addressing the cell phone lack of coverage, like along the 209 corridor?
The response has been from the private sector in those areas down. We don't have issues with respect to the private sector responding in the more traveled corridors in the county.
Right.
They've actually approached us for looking at locations on our buildings and our sites to improve service. The problem is that the numbers don't work for them that well up in the mountainous areas, so that the incentive would help. Build a tower you can locate on it as an incentive.
Right. Right. So whereas along the 209 corridor, for example, you don't see the need to build additional towers. It's just...
Well, they're looking at additional locations. They may not be towers. Think of 5G operates on telephone size kinds of facilities, not 180-foot tall towers. What I call community scale.
Anything else? All right, thank you. Next one is the Affordable Housing Fund. Page 58.
Yeah, I know where you're at. So that literally is the idea behind this is to be basically provide infrastructure and other incentives to affordable housing when the numbers don't pencil out. And the difficulty with respect to this, granted it's in here, the difficulty with respect to this is actually finding something that we can bond. So bondable interest at a county level means you need to have a property interest. So looking at that, there are some things that we can do to take that property interest, but there's some things that we can't do. In addition, as I've said to the legislature many times before, you do have some issues with respect to this because housing is not a county purpose.
But it can be made a county purpose.
Yeah.
So I just have a lot of questions on this. First of all, you know, in the introduction to the budget, it references housing and green growth and says that this budget proposes to assign $17 million in housing and green growth. Then here we see $30 million putting capitals five a year for 6 years. I don't know how this intersects with the proposal by Legislator Uchitel, which...
Separate.
So this budget is proposing to assign... Is this an assignment,
this is capital.
So we're proposing a $20 million assignment, a $30 million capital program.
Part of the $20 million assignment can be used to pay off.
You don't have to
this $30 million a month. It doesn't mean that it's $50 million in set aside costs. This is capital projects to do infrastructure, water projects, and also purchasing the land to then turn around and do stuff.
Don't think
like
of it as additive, and don't think of it as all bondable. So you could, for example, you could take a project that's in the capital program and use the assigned funds to pay for it. Road systems, sewer systems, land, as Deputy County Executive has mentioned. So there's those things that you could do. So they're not necessarily added.
So this housing is budgeted for? I mean, there are things in this, or are you saying we'd go at the bond if we were to do it?
If there's something that's bondable, the thought that the legislature could make is that instead of using the assigned money, they could actually use they could actually bond it separately. But they don't have to. You don't have to do that.
Okay, but basically it's we want it, the idea is to take a large sum of money and partner up. It's pretty nondescript here. Partner up with some. So this isn't going to be government-owned housing. This is going to be helping private developers and not-for-profits do housing.
Think of this as incentives
to do the infrastructure to get housing there as well.
Yeah.
Okay. So think of the Quality Inn project where we're partnering with the town of Ulster to expand their water and sewer.
Is it going
to
be elderly workforce, low-income, market rate?
Well, it's deemed affordable. So the what we would use for affordability is essentially anything less than 80% of AMI based on family size. On a rental basis, anything less than 100 to 110% of AMI based on home ownership.
And so it'd be a combination of workforce.
That's correct.
Now, have we ever taken a look at what we can sustain? I mean, before we start doing things like this, do we ever think about, all right, we have 180,000 people in this county. If we ever reach a point where this number of individuals, this number of housing units are partially subsidized by the government, where there's a point of no return, or there's a point of where we can't possibly produce. I mean, are we ever going to...
Like a saturation point where we're not going to...
Yeah, I mean, that would be a serious study, but I mean, right now I just hear this housing, we need housing and anything we can help...
It's well beyond this, at the saturation point. I mean, we could incentivize $5 million in projects for the next 10 to 20 years.
What are you using for that equation?
Well,
just a blanket statement of we can afford a lot more subsidized housing.
When you look at the affordability numbers that are in the Housing Action Plan, the number of families and individuals that are essentially paying more than 30% of their income for housing. And if you also look at the affordability with respect to the number of people that are paying more than 50% of their housing, some of the numbers that we've seen is in the past that we've done is somewhere in a neighborhood of about 5,000 units is what you would need essentially to move that forward with respect to some of the. We did a tri-county housing study, looked at Orange, Dutchess, and Ulster back in 2008 and looked at that. One of the things that we are proposing is to take a look at what a fair share number would be for Ulster County. Fair share being basically if you look at housing needs, what you would see in terms of those needs relative to the amount of housing you have right now. It's really difficult to understand, mainly because when you look at population growth, it hasn't been significant. But the problem you're having is that even though you're not having a lot of population growth, your household size has changed dramatically. So it went from about 3.5 people per household to a little less than 2.5 people per household, which makes your entire housing stock work harder to house the same number of people. In addition, the other things that you start to see is the number of units that are getting taken out of the housing market for residents of the county because of second home ownership and also because of short-term rentals. Short-term rentals in the county are approaching over 2,500 units. Out of those 2,500 units, what our contract with respect to the short-term rental people are telling us is about 90% of those short-term rental units are whole house units, which means that there's nobody living in it except for short-term rentals.
With that being said as well, isn't there things we should do as municipalities in the county before we start creating of throwing money at developers and not-for-profits to create more housing when we can open up housing stock virtually for free, maybe even generate money? Another part of that is, do we, in this, just these couple of lines I see, do we have an overall approach when we're going to throw 17 million plus more, you know, $50 million over the next couple of years at developers to help them build housing? Do we ever talk about pilots or tax credits and how much better it is for our tax base to stay away from those things? And if we're going to be throwing county tax dollars at them anyways, can we prioritize or have a plan to work with developers that maybe are going to be getting less tax credits, staying away from some of those statewide lotteries, maybe making sure we're not going to be giving pilots away as we move children in and leave the school districts out to dry. To me, that all has to be part of the plan, along with tracking what exactly, besides the short-term rentals, is driving and what our housing. I would love to see a graph of what we were 10 years ago, what we were 20 years ago, with regards to single unit. I appreciate the numbers you threw at us with the households. A lot of that has to do with children and people not being able to have young families around here. I know that affects Saugerties. Our household rate has gone down, and people are stopping in other towns because young families can't even afford the taxes in Saugerties. But I think that all has to come into play, and this just seems like a very generic little couple of lines. And what we're doing is we're working with developers that don't have the best interests in mind. And just because they end up building housing doesn't mean we don't need a more in-depth plan with more data.
So let's set it along. Let me take the first part of that question, which was, can we do something else? And the short answer is yes. And what are the things that we've done in response to that? Housing Action Plan was set up what we call a Housing Smart Communities Initiative. So we're standing at Housing Smart Communities Initiative up, which tries to essentially incentivize communities to change their zoning statutes and to change their regulatory policies so that they're harsher with respect to the ability to establish short-term rentals, and also so that they're easier to essentially move through and get more affordable housing constructed. It does something called inclusionary zoning, which is a certain percentage of all development, whether or not you build it at market rate or not, has to be affordable. City of Kingston, for example, is now 10%. Town Marbletown is 10%. There are other communities that do that. The last thing that you want to do is actually begin to identify those areas in the community where housing can be constructed, all types of housing, but making sure that the community has places within its within the community where it establishes housing. What I will tell you is that just about every town in this county has an open space plan. There are darn few towns that have a housing plan. We're trying to change that dynamic. And you can't address a housing crisis unless the communities are willing to address it with you. The other thing that you start to look at with respect to that is not only incentives, but disincentives. The disincentives is if you don't want to participate in a Housing Smart Community Initiative, what does the county want to do with respect to the dollars and cents that it has in terms of working with that community so that there's a disincentive not to participate? The example I would give you at the federal level, if you don't pass a local law or state law that deals with speed limits and or blood alcohol content, the federal government will take away your money for transportation. So the things that you can start to think about is, what do you want to do with sales tax if a community decides it doesn't want to participate, it doesn't want to have any affordable housing? You want to give them the same percentage of sales tax that you do other communities that are participating? So there are things that you can think about doing. Right now, the conversation within the Housing Smart Communities is incentives only. So that's the first piece of that. The second piece you asked me is, this has to do with giving money to developers. This is not just about trying to find money on the development side. It's also about finding things that we can do with respect to interventions so that people don't lose their housing. This legislature just passed using money with respect to Mid-Hudson Legal Services, rapid rehousing programs so they can, people that lose their housing, you can put them back in housing. Those are things that you can do. And last but not least is the quality of housing. So one of the things that other counties have done is essentially look at small landlords, not large landlords, but look at small landlords and provide programs with respect to doing housing improvements with the small landlord. In response, you get an affordable unit for X number of years. The last thing I would say that we've done is the legislature just authorized us to apply for an ADU plus one, accessory dwelling unit plus one. That's a state program that is going to provide subsidies to individual homeowners to essentially build an accessory dwelling unit with either at their property, in their accessory building, or at their house. The subsidy is about $125,000. In response, you get an affordable housing unit for about 5 to 7 years. We're partnered with the city of Kingston, RUPCO, and ourselves with respect to that right now. So those are things that we can do that are absent just trying to find large developers or multifamily structures that we can do to essentially make sure that we get additional units at the best possible price, and also scattered so that we don't essentially run into issues with respect to resistance at the local level to provide those units. Does that help?
Some of it I obviously disagree with. Some of it I don't think was specific enough to, I haven't heard that we have an overall plan, and I'll just leave everybody with this. How many trees do we want to take down? How much population do we want to have? Do we have enough population? Do we have a population limit? How much services can we provide to people? Are our roads going to traffic interest? And where does the water come from? I just hear government wanting to solve all these problems, and a lot of times we end up creating problems. I think the first thing we do is address short-term rental, but I know a couple of municipalities right now that don't have enough water for the people that are there, and we want to start building apartment complexes and subsidizing them all. I think we're really going down a dangerous road. We should pump the brakes, fix short-term rentals, and then go from there, but it looks like we want to really enter the housing market as a government.
Can you explain the process that...
Hold on, Stuart. I got several people ahead of you.
Sorry.
Walter, then Cahill, Chair Bartel, Michelle.
Thanks. So I'm going to just say my three questions in one so that way I can be done. So one is similar to my other one, is it would be very helpful to know what's our metric of success. How will we know? Is there a certain number of affordable housing units that is expected to be achieved as a result of this housing fund? Or if it's not units themselves, the greening of units or whatever. So, you know, again, I have no sense of the specificity of what we will gain from this in specifics. The second thing is, I echo what Legislator Maloney says in terms of the lack of, when it's not this specific, it gets me worried that there's some plan already to do a favor for a developer, you know, as opposed, how do we know, if this is truly an incentive, and I love the Housing Smart initiative where we have a planner who's focused on helping them, you know, these municipalities change their codes and it's efficient and the municipalities can do all that. That's a, you know, more things we could do to help municipalities get things straight is terrific. But, you know, doing favors for developers is less appealing to me. Now, if it was truly an incentive where, you know, what I find is in this last year or two, three is like, yeah, the developer was going to do this, and then we came and did it for them. And yeah, the developers. So that's not an incentive; that's a favor. How to know that these will be set up as actual incentives, where it's saying, "Look, we really need this in this community, but nobody wants to build there because it's just not cost effective. So we're going to offer this so that that can happen in that particular place, as opposed to someone saying, "Hey, I'm building a senior home, and can I have some cash to make it green?" So that's the second one, is that really knowing that it'll be used for incentive. And then the third also reflects it is, you say all of these wonderful other things that could be done with this besides just giving money to developers, but none of it's specifically in here. And so, like, how do we know that that's what's going to be done with it, as opposed to hearing that some guy wants to do senior housing and asked for a favor and said, can you pay for the greening of it? And we ended up paying for it. So, you know, what will it take to actually have that delineated in some specific way of what these activities will be for, how they will not be favors but incentives, and what the goal will be?
And if I could just speak to that. So I think we have to look at, there's a difference between a five-year capital program and a capital project, which comes in front of you to also be approved every time we do it. So I think the specificity you're looking for will come in each capital project. These capital programs are a broad overview of things we want to accomplish. We've heard from many of you, I guess not all, that housing is a priority, and we are putting forth a program to do that work. It is meant to be broad so that it can encompass anything on the infrastructure side we would need. We then come back to you with specific projects that we will put forward to spend the money. And I'll let Dennis...
No, I would echo Mark's comments and just add the fact that, you know, these things can go out in terms of what a request for proposals look like, similar to what happened when you did the infrastructure request for proposals for ARPA. You know what you're going to get until you got it. And then that would happen here as well.
Thank you. So I want to make sure I understood. In the very beginning of this, I think you said something about the county having to have a bondable interest in the property?
On certain instances.
On certain instances. Now, how would we go about doing that, having a bondable interest? That would mean we'd have to own it, correct?
No.
No.
No. It means we have to have a property interest.
Second part would be USITA. Would you be buying properties, transferring USITA, and then funding it through this program? So the county would then have a bondable interest or something like that? Is that kind of like what we're looking at?
So let me just give you a sense of some of the things that we've taken a bondable interest in, right? Fire training center on property owned by the town of Ulster. We have an easement for fire training center purposes on it. That's a bondable interest. Veterans Cemetery, New Paltz, owned by the New Paltz Rural Cemetery. We have an easement for Veterans Cemetery purposes. That's a bondable interest. So start to think about this with respect to housing. Housing site, developer owns it. We have an easement across it that basically says it has to be affordable housing for X number of years. That's a bondable interest, right? On water and sewer, we've done water and sewer projects in the past. We did a water and sewer project on Kings Highway. We've done road projects in the city of Kingston. We take an easement for those lines. That's a bondable interest. So you don't have to own it, but you do have to have a property interest that your bond council will approve.
And that goes back to what Dennis said at the beginning, was that we need to have housing be a county purpose.
Yeah.
And that is done through legislation. Westchester County has done that. That will allow us to do the same shovel-ready type project for housing that we are able to do for economic development.
And that would address what Eve was talking about, where we have communities that can't really, or a developer that can't really afford to do that kind of thing in an underserved community. If we have that codified in our law, that would allow us then to apply this money to those type projects. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, this is challenging to me because, first of all, it's called a fund, and not really a fund. Like, this is in our capital program, but we're creating a fund in our capital program, something we started through ARPA, which we really tried not to do. And I understood the mechanism of trying to utilize the capital as a multi-year planning tool. Okay. But many of the things you talked about are not bondable projects, are actually policy, you know, that we could consider and we could budget for in the budget itself. Instead, we've got this very vague $5 million a year in capital program for housing in the form of a fund that's not a fund, that's not restricted, that's just a five-year capital plan without actually a plan at all, just saying we're asking you to say yes to $5 million and somewhere down the line we'll figure out what bondable projects there are, $5 million per year. I think it's a little bit of the cart before the horse. I mean, even to Mark's point, if it's something that we need to, as a legislature, have a discussion about in terms of modeling off of Westchester, we need to do that first, and then it would seem to me we'd have this conversation. But right now, I'm having a very hard time wrapping my head around this and wrapping my head around the connection to the assignment, to the, you know, it's a lot of money with zero specificity. And to your point of it has to be a bondable interest, I mean, it has to be a bondable project to be in the capital or not, because sometimes create capitals that aren't really bondable. I mean, we've been creating capitals for things that aren't capital at all. You know, which again, we we were not really thrilled with in the legislature, but we're almost through ARPA, but I'm not sure it's the best practice of creating a 6-year capital plan without any plan at all behind it and calling it a fund. You know, I'm looking at you because you're the person at the end of the table, but
I'm wondering what you're going to do with the $17 million that basically is an assigned to housing that doesn't have a plan behind it.
I have the same concerns.
So that's kind of what I'm wondering about.
Move it.
You know,
we might just.
Well, we weren't even aware that these assignments were taking place, Dennis. I mean, until very recently, and until legislator, you should tell us proposal and internal conversations. We didn't even know that assignments were happening outside of the legislature's approval. So that puts us in a place of, like, and an assignment, as we all know or don't know, is just an assignment. I mean, it's not a restriction. So it's an assignment. It's a name, but it does show a kind of intent, which really begs the question of it happening outside of the legislature. But now having before us a capital program without a program, just with $5 million times six, and, you know, a lot of possibilities, which I think are many of the things that you brought up are very, very worthy of discussing, and maybe we should talk about them in the budget and in the legislature as legislation and policy that we move forward and budget for.
If I can, the difficulty of the cart before the horse is you have to know you have a cart and a horse in order to essentially begin to start to put things together in terms of details. The example I would give you would be is if I do a request for proposals or a request to essentially support housing organizations of whatever ilk I decide or we decide. If there's no money available at the end of that, then the people that you've asked to propose are literally like, why are we participating in this? Whereas if you do a request for proposals and you start to say these are the priorities that the legislature has established, then what ends up happening is then when you get those things in, you're going to know what you're going to spend. And that, I think, is the difficulty that we wrestle with. We wrestle with it. I know you're wrestling with it right now. But the point I'm trying to make is I imagine we're going to have the same conversation with respect to the Open Space Fund, which is also in there. We're essentially, what you did with respect to your ARPA funds was you said, here are the big things that we want to fund, and then you went out and looked and got projects to fund with respect to infrastructure, with respect to trail systems, et cetera, et cetera. That's what you're kind of doing here, right? And you're giving people an opportunity to say the legislature is committed. Here's where it's in the capital program. And now we're going to essentially start to ask what we want to do with it. I guess I could get specific and say we want to do water and sewer with it, but I don't know what water and sewer is because I don't know where the projects are and I don't know where they need help. To legislators Maloney's question is, and to legislator Walter's question is, are these favors, are these basically things that basically not but for the project doesn't go forward? That to me is the thing is they're not favors if the project can't go forward without the assistance, if there's a gap in the fund.
All right, Mr. Slater, you should tell.
Yeah, so a couple of the things here that are kind of I'm getting hung up on or really processing because I think I see what you're trying to do here, and it's the type of thing that we're also trying to do. So this is good that we're having this conversation. But there's a couple of things. One, there's you know, how do we get the legislature's intent sorted out on spending on housing? I mean, I think that is something that many of us are very eager to see happen. And there's a bunch of different programs that we want to support. Not all of them, I think, would need to be in a capital plan like this. The bondable ones, I mean, you mentioned some that are probably not at all bondable, mm-hmm. and that we definitely want to fund. So does this become a vehicle then for getting a little bit ahead of ourselves in terms of getting the actual legislative intent sorted out, because I think we still need to have conversations about how we're establishing this bucket of funding. So there's the question of the legislative intent and laying that out here that we need to get sorted out, and it might run in parallel to this, and that might work out fine. But I think that's those are conversations that we need to have, and that I'm very eager to have quickly. The second thing is then figuring out how do we actually decide what the plan is, which I think is where a lot of folks are hung up around this table, is figuring out what the, you know, which projects are we funding, where the gaps are. And I think I have a lot of appreciation that there's a concern about that. But then I'm going to introduce another concern that I have with some of these things, which is that actually getting the projects to happen, even if they're approved, I think is really, really hard. And that's the type of plan that I think that we, and you've even brought this up to me as a concern that you have, Dennis, that we are, you know, we have authorized projects that we haven't been able to execute on, and that is something that I think we need to have a conversation about as well, because we can allocate and we can intent all we want, but if the projects don't actually happen and we don't have the right human infrastructure to bring them to bear, that then becomes my biggest concern about all of this. So I don't know how we sort through all of that. I think with some of the conversations that we're having in the coming weeks, we should at least be able to figure out some of the legislative intent stuff, and then the question becomes, does this line up with that? And obviously that's what we're going to figure out.
That sort of leads me to the question that I have, and that's, you know, in talking about affordable housing, you know, obviously we have to have the infrastructure there to build the affordable housing. We need public sewer, we need public water. And I was wondering how it is that you plan to coordinate these infrastructure projects with the desire to build affordable housing. Because I know specifically in my district there's one project that the town would love to address, but we have to get water there first. And so I was wondering how that coordination process is going to work.
So some of these funds will go towards that infrastructure, and there would be a call for projects that would go out, and municipalities who want to do things like build water and sewer to incentivize a housing project would propose for that call for projects. This fund is also based off of a Westchester County fund, which they are the ones that they will go out and they will purchase property that can then be surplused, and you can work with nonprofit and other types of developers to incentivize and make sure that projects happen that would not have otherwise happened. So there's two different kind of uses for these funds. The first one would be a call for projects that would go out. It would go out to you all so that you could let your towns know that this is out there.
Because that's specifically the situation that we're encountering, is that the town would like to partner with the county to actually purchase property and then get the infrastructure to the property.
Correct.
And then build housing.
Right.
And so we're just trying.
Yeah, and it's not just a coordination between infrastructure, it's also a coordination between local zoning as well. So
yes.
You need to make sure that the local zoning is appropriate as well. You want to purchase a property and then get zoned out.
Comptroller Gallagher?
Yes, I was wondering, is the intention for this this capital investment, would it apply also to communities that are low mod income communities that need improvements in infrastructure? So I know that we have like some trailer parks, et cetera, that are really lacking appropriate infrastructure right now. It's existing housing that could.
So you can think of ways that you can make that work, either by looking at qualifying census tract, disadvantaged areas, or a number of things that they're used to essentially identify those. And then you can think that you could come in, for example, as a backup to some of these, to some of the grants. Community development block grants sometimes, particularly for public facilities, are buttressed by the fact that there's a local match in terms of their availability. In a lot of communities, the example I would give is the town of Ulster. There's sewer to a trailer park. There's water to an area. Lake Katrine got a sewer project as well, where they've applied for community development block grant funds. But there was a community cost to that, not just a CDBG. So in some instances, you may want to assist the community to do that kind of work.
So it doesn't have to be new built.
It doesn't. You certainly want to make sure that if you have existing housing, that you don't lose it, or that it's not a public safety, it's not a public health issue. Legislator Pete.
Thank you. I agree with Legislator Stewart. We need to start looking at the infrastructure in order to get these housing units in. I mean, we've already invested, and it's noted on here, Golden Hill, that, you know, we've invested millions. And we should have turned that title over and walked away from that a year ago and let these billionaires just develop the property on their own. I would much rather see the infrastructure go into water and sewer with a caveat or a restriction that if it's for expansion, it's reserved for affordable housing. And there is the town of Gardner that had a developer that was interested, and they had to walk away. Town of Rochester had a developer. We have two proposed multifamily dwell. I think one is 88 and the other is 100. But we don't have the water infrastructure in Esopus. And that's specifically where it should go to. I don't want it to be funding any private developments. It should be funding the municipalities for their build out. It should be public sector funds.
How much they list?
I don't know. Everybody keeps trying to confuse the issue here. To me, it's pretty simple. This is a budget. And the incentive is that we want to use money towards housing. So you set aside in your budget money to be used. Because if you come up with a project that's not budgeted, there's no money for it, therefore you don't do the project. You become project specific after your fund is created and there's a pot of money for which you will you know, put a project in for. But without having a pot of money in the budget, there's nothing you can do. There is no affordable housing because you don't have a fund. This is a placeholder for funding for affordable housing. Without having a placeholder and the money there, what are you doing?
That argument, kind of, you don't need legislators anymore because it's, well, we're going to eventually do this. Without the money, we're not going to be able to do it. Let's put the money aside, and then I don't think that's how it's done responsibly anywhere, government or private sector, where you don't get any specifics. You throw $17 to $20 million, and you say, and you trust without verification that we have some kind of a plan. And I think the housing plan could be so different, which is what I've been trying to speak to. How we're going, where we've just acknowledged that, and I talk about it all the time, when you look at our population, how there's years it's actually decreasing. There's been many units built. There's still nowhere for anyone to live, and now we've gotten to the point where, and we keep throwing this word around, I think we need to be more specific when we talk about affordable housing, because some of this affordable housing, you know, workforce housing is up to 120% of AMI, which means, and that's what we really need that right now. We have people, especially young people, moving out of the county right now that are working inside the county, and they can't even live here. So I think we have to know what exactly we're after. We need to be tracking more of what's driving this. I think we know what's driving it. When it comes to favors, like Legislator Walter referred to, that I have issues with, sometimes I just think it's we're giving you too much to do. There's five or six of you that seem to be doing all these things. You're working on 17 different multi-million-dollar projects, and we wonder why the developer seems to take advantage of us at times. Well, how can you possibly dive in and take you 50, 60 hours a week to get the perfect Golden Hill out? Maybe we need to do that sometimes. Pick one or two projects and do them right, then move on to the next project. But and it's short-term rentals. Why would we go and start building units? Actually, it was mentioned that we might even hold sales tax over municipalities' heads unless they let us build apartment, government-funded...
No.
Well, you mentioned that as a possibility.
Zoning.
I mean, we're getting...
He was referring to zoning.
Zoning.
He was talking about zoning.
Changing
their zoning laws. He never mentioned
and if they didn't, not getting sales, not giving them as much as a sales tax share. Am I correct? I didn't need to be interrupted there. I think I understood what he was saying. At the point is, before we start holding sales tax over municipalities' heads to not change their zoning so we can do some deal with some developer, let's fix what's so easy to be fixed. That's the short-term rental. That's what's driving more of this than anything else, but yet we don't do it, and we want to set tens of millions of dollars aside with no specifics so that we can go ahead and continue Golden Hill-like projects. And it may not be a favor, but we were told to begin with that the sale of the property would be fair. It's not going to be. Now we're paying for the green initiatives over there, solar panels. the demo of the jail. These were all things we were told that the developer, now if not but for, if it turns out later, well, what is the point of us being here if we always can be told, well, if not but for, it's not going to happen then. So, yeah, we told you this would be done and this would be done, and the developer would do this and the developer would pay us this, but it's not going to be done unless we do this. So it might not be a favor, but it sure was bad information to begin with. Nothing specific, once again, and then we're holding the bag. I just don't know why. And one last thing, when you talk about county purpose, I do think we should have a county purpose with regards to these short-term rentals. We should be bringing municipalities in. One of the most successful municipalities at regulating short-term rentals, from what I hear, is Marlboro. Why aren't we putting the success of Marlboro and helping other towns with those same kinds of enforcement successes, putting Airbnbs back on to the market, regulating those LLCs and those conglomerates from coming in and buying up homes here, getting them back to where families and rentals are long-term. But we don't do that, but that could be a county purpose with regards to Westchester County. Do we know their success and failures? We just hear, well, another county's doing it. Oh, they must be doing it perfect. Have we talked to any critics over there to find out what they've done well and what they haven't before we jump into there and shadow what they do? And the last thing is, We're talking about all this stuff. We're about to have a new executive here. Does the executive really do anything? Because nothing seems to change as from executive to executive to executive. That's the elephant in the room to me, or the donkey in the room. We could have a totally different person. Aren't they most of the people's bosses that we're talking to here? And in 2 months, it's going to be the same exact plan? I mean, let's get some specifics and let's do something we all agree on and get this short-term rental thing off the ground. Get these municipalities together, figure out how they can enforce and stop these LLCs, and open up hundreds, if not thousands, of units over the next 12 months. Then talk about taking $20, $40, $50 million and start doing taking things off the tax rolls and building affordable housing, which I'm not even sure we always know what we mean by affordable housing.
Thank you. With all due respect, this isn't a budget. This is a capital plan, and it isn't a pot of money. It's a
capital program.
It's a capital program.
It's not a capital project. We can't spend
right.
a dime of this
yes,
until we come
that's
back.
That's what I'm saying. It's not
it's
a pot of money.
It's part of a budget.
Yes,
we
part
have
of
to
a budget.
Submit.
I know. But I'm saying it's not a pot of money in the budget. It's not. It's a capital.
It's not
program.
Operating budget. It's
yes.
a capital program take from part of the budget.
I get it, but it's not a fund. And when you're referencing Westchester, and I got to look into Westchester's Housing Implementation Fund, right? That's the Westchester thing, right? That came out of, by my fast Google, some lawsuit in 2010.
Kind of Westchester basically lost a lawsuit with respect to fair housing because they get a substantial amount of community development block grant, federal money,
mm-hmm.
and the only place where they were putting poor people was essentially in poor neighborhoods. And so the Westchester was required by the federal government to essentially develop a program to assign fair share allocations for housing to all its municipalities. And Westchester went that route, and they assigned it, and they actually put money in their budget to sue municipalities that wouldn't allow affordable housing.
But it also is a 62-page plan, which probably came before and as the result of a lawsuit. That's what I'm saying. It's like we have one page that says $5 million a year, and it's got to be bondable, as you pointed out earlier. We've got to have a bondable
some
interest.
It may not. Some of it may be able to come out of the signed funds and not have to be bonded.
But this is the $5 million a year in the capital program.
But that could come out of, as remember I said, that it may not be additive. It may actually be some of that money may come from the $17 million.
It's very complicated.
I do want to address Legislator Maloney's comments with respect to short-term rentals. The county planning department and the county planning board has been working with communities with respect to short-term rentals since they first came into existence. And we've been making specific recommendations to those communities to how to regulate short-term rentals since that particular point in time. We have worked with just about every town in the county right now with respect to their short-term rental regulations. In some instances, the towns do not desire to regulate them. In some instances, they do regulate them, and they regulate them significantly. There's now a case that came out of New Orleans that basically some of the premises to regulate short-term rentals, which is the differentiation between owner-occupied and non-owner-occupied, the case law now suggests that you cannot differentiate between owner-occupied and non-owner-occupied because of the Commerce Clause.
And so we're now revisiting some of our guidance to municipalities with respect to short-term rentals. But we have been on the forefront of discussions with respect to short-term rentals since they first came into existence many years ago.
So with not a lot of results.
But
I think there was something across
not
the river.
True. Not yeah. this capital project or program. Yeah. I just want to point out that if, I would just ask if we can try to keep
yes, please.
Our comments from staff and questions to the capital program.
Good point. Legislative, did you?
Well, I mean, it's my understanding not one penny of this can be spent without coming back to the legislature. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. So we do get to bite the apple. Mm-hmm. But if there's so much consternation over this particular $5 million a year, let's just take it out of the budget and we can deal with it next year.
Mr. Walter?
Thank you.
Yeah. Not exactly what I would propose, but I do want to sort of a point of process clarification. Because I don't personally want to spend an hour on each of these just to have them all in there exactly the same way, and then we end up approving it and potentially regretting it later. So, you know, I know for myself I'm going to just focus my comments on what I'd like to see in a revision. I would not want to see it out. But what I'd like to see in a revision, and perhaps if we can focus a little bit on that, because, again, it's let's move this forward. So I will say that for the previous one, a little bit more specificity of where those broad, what we're actually going to achieve. With this one, you mentioned some specific areas of focus, just like ARPA came with some overall parameters, like, if you can just add those elements that this is what we're going to prioritize for this, I think it might satisfy us just to see it documented so that we know that we are actually on the same page. And so I'm going to request that you hear what some of the concerns are and just add the language in there so that we could feel more comfortable.
I mean, in years past, your request has been done through budget modifications that the legislature has done. We have submitted our capital program. So there is not a mechanism for us to resubmit a revised capital program. So if you need to add specificity
to
projects in the program, feel free to do so, but we don't have a mechanism to submit something else.
So that's, I mean, let's unpack that a little bit, because honestly, I already looked forward on two more, and like the transportation one is we're going to study transportation for 5 years and put this money in. It has no specificity. And so basically you're saying that we have to we part-time legislators who have a full-time other jobs have to go into each one of these and make an amendment where we add the language that it needs to have had in the first place?
So
no, this is a placeholder.
So what I think we'll do, as we do in other meetings, is if you give us the feedback, then we can write the language that makes sense for us in terms of operations and then feed it back to whoever would want to carry that amendment.
That's a better suggestion.
But we can't resubmit the entire
That's a technicality.
Thank you.
We can do the other part, though.
Thank you.
It would be done as a budget amendment. When the
yeah, just come to us with the specifics, and we can research with the budget team and others to get the language together and then at least give you guys something to run with.
Right, so I think when we keep talking, that is our specifics.
Okay.
So if that can get heard, you know, then consider yourself being told the specifics.
Got it. 8 sets of ears across from me, too.
Great.
So.
Okay. We made it through two of them so far. We did it in a little over an hour. All right, the next one, page 61, planning, community development program.
So this is
61.
This is similar to the housing program in that you're looking at providing a placeholder to essentially do community development work that would also include infrastructure that is related to broader community development goals, similar to what Legislator Maloney talked about, which is water and sewer and those types of things, which are unrelated to housing.
So just to clarify, when you say it's a match, is this only with a municipality? Okay, I didn't find that word. So one request is that it says that match is in partnership with a municipality. If it's there, maybe I missed it, but I didn't see that there.
Yeah, so it's a 75%. It can't exceed 75% of the total cost. Does that include the municipality match and us, or
total cost?
Total cost. So, we can give them up to 500,000. So if the project's 650, right, the matching part of the 500 has to be a right? You following what I'm saying?
I am, yeah. and that's what I was trying to sign it, because you could have a project where it's traditional infrastructure, and you have either it's on the intended use plan for water with the state, ESC money, DOT money on a road project, right? So I think there's multiple sources of funds. What we're saying is if the project's $5 million, we're not going to fund any more than 75% of the whole.
With a cap,
right? So I guess the technical part would come down to, on the implementation side, are we saying that the town could also use DOT money to come up with their 25?
The 500,000 for any project, right? So doesn't that cap our contribution at 500,000?
Similar to what we did for the water sewer program, which was based off of this, the 5 million that we did with the towns.
Yeah.
So it was no more than a third, but cash, 500,000.
Okay, thank you.
So that's the intended kind of balancing act here.
So, but we do really want to engage municipalities in here to use their CDBG stuff as well.
100%. Right? This is really to catalyze projects that they may have in the hopper and have a funding gap on, where the Transportation Council or otherwise they couldn't come in as they've done in the past.
Got it. Thank you.
Yep.
We did this as a shovel-ready program in the past through USITA, where essentially we funded up to 50% at that particular point in time. Mm-hmm. That's how it was originally funded. They did all the administrative work, and then Ulster County just issued the necessary bonds. All the contractual work was done.
And are we envisioning bonding for this, or utilizing
I think either or.
I
think this is probably going to end up being mostly bonding.
I don't think he's saying that he's going to do this project.
So the only comment I'll make on this, and I don't want to beat dead horse with the last thing, but it ties in with this. So we're talking about carrot and stick approaches to towns whose zoning is not conducive to affordable housing. Mm-hmm. To me, this is a carrot that could be used.
Exactly.
So, but I say that going back to Legislator Walt's point, you need a plan. You got to be able to identify which towns actually have the locations that could even support a project, but their zoning doesn't now currently allow for it. So that's where that would be able to identify. I think that's just, I don't need a response really, but that's sort of where I think we're coming from, is if we had a plan, you could identify it, and then here's the programs. If one of the towns applied, but they're not willing to change their zoning, sorry, you're not eligible.
I'll just offer that. I hear you loud and clear. We view that more as in the implementation side. When we get down to operations and you're creating program rules, that's where I would view that level of specificity and detail would be appropriate.
Anybody else? All right. Thank you.
If you're going to have that carrot and stick conversation, I just think, like Chris is saying, it needs to be black and white and part of the process. It can't be a discretionary leverage we give you guys to go and say, well, don't give it to that town. They haven't been doing enough, in your opinion. But I don't think it should be there now. I agree that that would come later if you're going to.
Yeah, when we come for an appropriation or for establishing a capital project in order to let us do this part of it, that's the discussion to be had, is what policy is this consistent with or priority for the legislature and the county.
And I'd like to see an entire conversation of the legislature before we start doing what we've just mentioned twice now, which is holding town, trying to pressure towns with possible funding in order for them to open up zoning or allow us to push a housing project down their throat. If they don't want to do it, they're not going to get money from us. Let's have a conversation before we go down that road.
All right, next one, page 64, transportation planning studies.
So these are transportation planning studies that are run through the Transportation Council. They're 100% reimbursable at the federal level. We put them in capital because they're studies. They don't have to be here if you don't want them there. We put them there because we have every year the Transportation Council in February produces a unified planning work program. Within that unified planning work program, there are specific studies that need to be done, and that's why it's in here.
page 87.
John, can I just ask a question on that?
Okay.
If we, if from a meeting that you and I were both at a few last week, we discussed the potential that we might, that our region could be reclassified in terms of the urban planning funding. Would that affect our funding and the reimbursement for the study?
It would.
Page 87, the open space and recreation fund.
So that literally is the idea that behind that is that we would be able to fund farmland protection and other open space protections. This is a matching fund conceived to work with municipalities to do that. It's been in the program for a number of years. Yeah, it's been in the program for a number of years. We used this when we purchased land in the village of New Paltz on Plains Road, the Talabiaro farm. We used this funding for that particular source.
Next one, page 93, UND Corridor Trail.
The UND Corridor Trail is a facility in town of Shandaken. It's about 5 miles, I believe. We're looking at we received a transportation alternatives program grant for about $4.9 million. The legislature in putting that grant allowed us, provided funding. There should be a first instance funding resolution, I think, going through the legislature this month for this particular program.
Same thing for the second one.
So the grant was for what was it, 4.1, but we're going to put in another 1 million, or is that for the trail?
I believe the grant we got is somewhere in the neighborhood of around. I'd have to go look it up, but the resolution is in this model. But the grant is 80% of the total project cost, as estimated by the engineer last year.
Page 112, car building renovation.
Real quick.
Yeah.
Who's in those buildings now? Is the court still in there, a judge?
No, this is crime victims.
Oh, crime
and they're the only ones.
In the corner.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Department of the Environment.
Yeah. Sorry. Car is the Department of the
Environment. Okay.
No.
That's it?
No. Oh, it is crime victim.
All right. Which one is it? Crime victim of the environment?
Crime victim is the only department.
Second
division.
Second building. All right, thank you.
Good. All right, next one, page 118, County Storage and Warehouse Facility.
Why don't you come here?
Yeah.
That's okay.
I got a tube for it.
It's warm.
All right, man, I got you.
Well, we just rent out.
So is this actually necessary now that we're doing the lead?
Oh, that's true. I'm not on
the legislature. We can still, as you all know, we just entered into a 5-year lease for a building in town of Ulster. We've gotten into leases in the past, and I know there's a space study coming up. So this capital has not been established yet, but it could be used to build a new warehouse.
Was this in last year's plan?
It was, but
this was going to be teamed up with the sheriff's department
combined.
Yeah, and now we're not. The sheriff is not going to be a part of this.
Right.
Is this, does this look the exact same as it did last year?
No. Chair Martels?
I was going to ask about the space study. I don't know if it makes more sense to wait till we hear back from the space study. That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I could just say that as one legislator, I would prefer that we own a building, that we think about that longer term. I understand the need to be in this leased space, and that's a temporary fix, so I know that's something you're going to be looking at with the space study, and maybe we take this out until we get the feedback.
Well, we're just not going to establish it.
We're not going to establish it.
Right.
Okay.
It'll stay in the program as part of the planning, but I think that's with any of the lease space. We will have other leases that will be bringing forth, but I'm viewing them as temporary until the end of the space study, because things, so the DA's office,
we've run out of room at the courthouse, so this is just an example. I will have to get temporary lease space for the district attorney to accommodate an additional judge, but I'm viewing it as temporary. The DA space needs are not going away, so the idea is that at the end of the space study, that we'll look for permanent space for departments like DPW or the DA.
Can I just ask a follow-on question? If that's the case, I mean, if we're not planning on moving forward with design and this in 2023, rather than why wouldn't we push it off, like even just
but
push the whole thing to 24?
Because I think it's realistic.
Mark's point that
I think it's realistic that we could. I think it's realistic that we could establish the project and enter into design at the conclusion of a space study in the end of second quarter, right? Mm-hmm. So I do think that's realistic. I do think that working with OCA's architects and engineers as well as our own and finishing a space study, realistically I could be moving forward in something by third quarter for permanent space for a DA.
Can I follow on one more question? So the other question would be, then isn't it premature to, and we talk about this a lot, to telegraph these numbers? I mean, we've already have in a capital plan numbers saying what we're going to spend on construction in advance of going out to bid. It's basically saying to prospective bidders that this is what we're willing to. I think it's just something we want to think about. Like, we could always certainly believe that this legislature, especially coming off of a space study, would be really supportive of a project like this. I think it's one of those.
I hear you on that. I think we can also shore up numbers with internal architects and engineers because we have standby contracts. We've talked about this in previous meetings, so that is something, especially facility-wide, that we want to start doing with those consultants. But I think we can consider where we are in the process and say, do we just put out for design first, and then that other number comes in when that number is shored up.
And amend the capital.
The only risk there is that if you're looking at multi-year planning, we're not even putting a placeholder out in the years for construction, so you will be basically unbalanced, right?
Right.
Like, we're not telegraphing also to ourselves or to you that there's an intent to spend $1.35 million in another year.
Mm. So, again, you really think it's realistically possible that we're going to design and construct this year? I mean,
no.
This coming year, 23?
No.
Yeah. So maybe we want to just
bump it out.
Do the planning this year, construction next year.
Sure.
23,
24.
Especially
since
we're...
As we're planning...
Hold on, let's take one.
Sorry, just maybe my memory is wrong. Didn't we just approve last month for DPW to move? Mm-hmm. Is that the premise, that they also have to move now? Again?
So we're
moving now, and then the space study will show us what we actually need future-wise, and we will prefer to build our own warehouse and not lease.
Right. I guess the language, it says DPW must vacate the premises, but we already knew that a month ago and already had a resolution telling us that they were vacating, and we already approved for them to take a new space.
Yes.
So it just sort of sounds like that space now has to be vacated. So
that
step already occurred.
That's
not
issue. Yeah.
Okay.
With the space studies that we'll be doing, I was wondering if we'd be able to take a look at some of the other leases, especially inside of DPW. Vandale Properties, we're still in that terrible lease? Which would also affect this if we decided that we could, and I know they're different, that's the bridge fabrication or whatnot, and I think they had a couple of, do they work on trucks up there too? I'm not sure what they do up there.
Yeah.
But maybe a more of a central location if we could do it all, or move certain things, but that's a lease that I know a lot of us would like to see go away, and maybe that could be part of this.
I think that's the intention.
I'm good.
You good?
Yep.
Okay.
Flashback.
Yes. All right. 124 courthouse parking lot.
I actually do have a question about the 121 courthouse fascia exterior. It's like the thing
that hangs over our head, literally.
We're not fixing the cupola this year, which is good.
But can someone? Yeah. So, so in the courthouse fascia exterior repairs, roof replacement.
Yeah.
I feel like this goes on.
That's in design right now.
But it's proposing 2.6525 million in 2023. So we're expecting to go to construction
this spring and
probably bid
winter
February, I would say. January, February.
For spring construction.
For spring construction.
Okay. Does it include that?
It's painting the cupola.
Well, you got to
prepare before you
put
it. That's paid parking over there in the courthouse as well?
Not yet.
That's not paid right now.
Not yet.
Yeah, Laura, I didn't think that was paid.
Not yet.
Are we ever going to get to that point? Are we going to have paid parking over there?
We have a kiosk.
It's
paid. We have a kiosk that's been installed that if the decision is to charge, for parking over there, it can be done.
And it's a live-action kiosk? It's not electronic?
Similar to what...
it's been years we've been talking about doing this right, because we got every restaurant worker just pulling in at 3 o'clock, parking.
This one's bagged and ready to go very shortly.
Okay, we're doing that?
Yes.
That's a long time in the making. All right.
Well, I think we did it on all the county-owned parking lots, correct?
We did it on the courthouse and this one. This project started, months before COVID. Right. We haven't been able to get the equipment. We just got the equipment in and installed about 3 months ago. Mm-hmm. We didn't want to cancel the one. I mean, the parking at the courthouse was a bigger issue, pre-COVID and during COVID. It's still a little bit of an issue now, but not as bad. And so we haven't decided to go live on that yet. I think that's probably an action of the legislature anyway, because you all charge the fees. And so we're ready to go on this one. Probably at the beginning of the next year, we're going to train the current workers there on how to assist the public on the kiosk. And then we can go with the courthouse if that's what is determined. This is different. This is paving. And
yeah, I got you. But it might
be preparing us to charge for
it. If you're going to be installing while you're doing, that'd be the time to do it.
All right, 127 Development Court parking lot.
This is another new capital project in the program, and it's not slated until 2023.
That's next year. Where are we at?
133.
Don't worry, it's not coming up until
now. It's not coming up until 2 months.
Elevator
modernization. 133 elevator modernization project.
Yes.
Yeah, so this actually, you've seen an elevator project in the capital program in the past, but it's to create a third elevator. Mm-hmm. And it's always been on the back of the building.
Yeah.
You've noticed that it takes kind of a long time to work the elevators here. So this project would be to repair and modernize the existing elevators.
And this is new but expedited because, for one, we got somebody stuck in the elevator for about an hour, hour and a half, and that led to the elevator being down for two and a half months. There is no more parts that our elevator company can buy to kind of swap out with these elevators. So we need to modernize these elevators. They're basically original, I think, to this building, essentially. We need to get them updated as quickly as possible.
I always heard, and maybe it was wrong, that there was some kind of code issue with these elevators in the middle, and we always talked about is that what you're saying before, that the elevators would have to be put somewhere else, but we're able to replace these here at...
We were trying to increase the size of these to have more like a freight elevator out front here, which you can't do with these elevators here. So it doesn't get to the freight issue.
No, it's the hoistway is the hoistway. You can't expand the hoistway to make it a freight elevator or an elevator larger than what we have now. So we're stuck with what we have, basically. They're hydraulic elevators, which is really the old kind of elevators. Elevator business here, do we?
We
hired a consultant. It's actually our current third-party qualified elevator inspector, and they will be doing the consultant work to be putting together all of the modernization process, basically. And then that will go out to bid, hopefully February of 2023.
What part will go out to bid? The consultant or the work?
No, the actual work. The modernization portion of the consultant's work.
So I heard the close button is a facade. so I don't want to pay for the close button.
I think that's an all elevator.
But it, I understand, but it doesn't actually close the door any faster. Mm-mm. So I'm not paying for a close button.
You press the number button and that will jump up and down.
It'll take as long.
Don't jump. No one's jumping.
It's going to be a long night already.
So it's a modernization of those two elevators. But are we talking about a third? No, we're just going to.
I think we took that project out of the program.
Yeah.
It's just been kicked down.
It's
going to
build
too many
a new
years
office
and.
But you said just these two elevators, but in there it says six of them.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. So it's a program. We're going to start with these two elevators and then move to the courthouse and then to DPW on Shamrock Lane.
The only comment I'll make about elevators is from personal experience from the health hospital is Otis told us that our elevators were beyond repair. They were from 64. They couldn't do anything to them. We had to replace them. Mm-hmm. When we called the other elevator companies that exist out there, the same one as this one, it's a different price or whatever it's called, miraculously, all of a sudden, then it could be done for relatively cheap.
So we're not using neither company. There's an inspector that's like a third party, that they have to be third party. They're not associated with Otis or... the other company,
Schindler, not associated with any of them,
right?
But does a modernization? Are we expecting that it's going to mean a total?
It could be. Yes, it could be. Okay. Like Mark said, there's obsolete parts. Those will be converted to new.
Okay.
You'll see a new cab. You'll see new floors.
Okay, on that for Mike.
But
I want
not
to
the hydraulic.
You're going to stick with hydraulic? You're going cable?
I think Mike has to stick with hydraulic.
Like it or you don't
but
like it?
I mean, in most, it works
I think
most
that's
of the time, right?
Most of the time, yes. Very few times does
it
not work.
So, no close.
That's one of
them. I don't know. Let's hope we make this one.
I love Formica.
Okay, page 151, DPW pump house
along.
Control upgrade, Kingston Water Department.
Hold on.
Pump house water, 151.
We're doing the fairgrounds.
I'm sorry, what is this one?
151.
Is there a SCADA system
doing new
for the pump house?
Can I actually ask a question about fairgrounds?
Thank you.
Fairgrounds 137.
Okay.
Just for a second. So what is in this 23, what project is specifically in 23? Is that the domestic
two.
Water? Space? Okay.
That's phase two. That's the water.
It's the water. That's what I'm saying. Okay, great. Thank you.
It's a big project.
It is. That's important.
It is. So, I mean, we've been
so it's the SCADA system for Kingston Water?
Yes.
That's what you said? Okay.
You had legislator.
Yeah, does this covers it? I mean, I see it's going internal inspection of the tank, but is it for the UCAT, mental health, and the operations building, just those three, just our buildings?
No,
or does it also go for Golden Hill and
the tank?
The pump house here, actually, it's for Golden Hill. It's still for Golden Hill. The nursing home as well. So that's
okay.
That's powered by
that. So, and the future affordable housing.
Yes, with the office.
Okay, so we're putting more money into the affordable housing right there, too.
So this is needed for our own operations for years now. So this is a need prior to that project.
What page was that? That was 151.
151.
Yeah, so we skipped over the Government Operations Center?
It's already been...
That was strategic.
No,
142.
Well, I do have a question on it.
It's already got a project number, so we've already approved it. So
okay.
If you want to talk about it,
no, I don't. I just was asking.
Well, Walter, does he still open
sorry, I'm
no,
sorry.
No, I would have done it anyway. So it suggests here that I assume that the building of it is really going to happen in 2026. Because that's where the $15 million is.
So you pay the bills.
Probably.
It's the government operations.
For 30 years or whatever, but
right now, as you know, it's in design, site acquisition design. And when that's finished, then it'll go out to bid and construction. And that's, I think, the anticipated completion date.
Is in some point in 2026, because that's when the expenditure is in 2026.
But
and 2025.
Right, but the big one.
That's when it closes out.
When it closes out. So typically, you lag behind few months. I mean, I think...
Right, but I think it's important for us to recognize, like, when we're told you better hurry up and make a decision by tomorrow,
we will be in prior to 2026. When we go to establish the capital project, we will have to amend this program. We were told by the consultants that we'll be in 18 to 24 months. This was at the last, I think, Ways and Means meeting. 18 to 24 months from legislative approval on the site. So that would be 2024. Right. So we'll have to amend the program when we go to add money into the project. That's why I'm saying, again, we have to come to you to approve future spending in some of these other program projects, but in this one we will as well, and we'll just have to amend the overall capital program to bring the money closer.
Just kidding.
Which is fine, but I think it's also, I mean, we want to get these expectations and estimates as close to real as possible, and I mean less than numbers, because we had that previous conversation, than the time. Because I had the same thought that Legislator Walter, I was at that Ways and Means meeting, told that 24 months, and then I looked at this and said, wow, that's way more than 24 months. That's, you know, 4 years.
Right. Well, 24 months for approval, so I guess we were just projecting.
You're just projecting.
That's what I was saying.
We'll just...
Yes. So, yeah. So are we, you know, all kidding aside, you know, do you want us to amend that?
Yes.
The construction to 2025?
Yeah, we'll have better information, too, I think, in 30 days where we can...
So make a note of that.
Why 2025, not 2024?
Well, we could do that too.
Yeah.
I mean, look, we want to expedite this project.
Okay. What page is this on?
142.
But realistically, guys, I do think that within 30 days we'll have more concrete information that we can all feel comfortable with. That's part of the system anyway, so that we can make an informed amendment to the program by the time amendments are hitting and we're
doing the acquisition. 2025, is that what
they're looking at? Yeah. So you shift everything up.
Okay, next one is 150, page 154, quarry complex renovation.
Okay, so that's another basic light improvement for that facility. It's not our main building on Hurley Avenue, but the buildings. It's the garages in the back, and that's slated for 2025.
What page, sorry?
We own the building, obviously.
Yes. Yes.
I wish that was.
Next one, 150, page 157, record storage building.
Similar project, interior and exterior renovations, and that's slated for 2024.
Walter.
Just educate me, since we keep approving all these electronic filing systems, what is being stored in in this record storage building?
I mean, there is still a lot of records that until a certain amount of time we have to store the physical records, and then we can transfer them. So there was decades of records that we were modernizing by going to electronic records. There are our disposition requirements require us to hold on to the physical copies.
Previously, I mean, or can still?
Still.
So you still have to have a physical copy of all these things?
On many different types of documents. Not all.
Until our New York State.
I have spoken to court cases back in the past, and part of what her vision is the first floor, where they have a presence in a lot of records. Once those are digitized, that actually becomes a freed up space, which will be incorporated into our overall space study. But my understanding is not everything can go digital in this sense, where we can then discard, or we wouldn't want to, honestly, in some senses, because of historical records.
This is a lot of like painting of exterior finishes and upgrading, like some right.
Do we own this building?
Yes.
Can I? I know we do work sometimes on. Can I just ask that, going into the future, the overview that we just have owner. I mean, most of the time it'll say county, but just for our own, you know. And then occasionally when we don't own the building, that may be a conversation we want to have. Look, if we're putting a security system in, we're going to do that, even if we don't own the building. I know that's a lot of what we do to buildings we don't own, but I'd appreciate it.
Can I ask a question on roof replacement? Which is 160?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I don't know. I mean, it's just a discrepancy between the narrative and the cost breakdown, because it says to date the expenses are $1 million in design and $900,000 in construction, and that breakdown isn't reflected here. But my question is, when are we going to deal with the jail?
That's next year? The design is going to start next year.
Okay.
And that's going to be a full replacement.
Yeah. And so when will it actually be, will the replacement happen in 23 also?
No, I doubt it.
Okay.
Maybe the tail end.
How much design has to be done? I mean, the roof is designed already, right? I mean, it's like we're replacing an existing roof. So how much design really needs to be done? I don't mean that as a sarcastic.
Yeah, no.
I don't know.
I think we can go back to architect who was hired, I mean, to look at that. Whether they're speccing material or whatever else they're doing, if they're replacing it in kind or going with different materials, I think all that has to be considered on a roof like that.
And there were issues from the start, apparently, that weren't communicated.
That's why I'm thinking a change in materials or structure may occur to account for that. So
and some of the roof systems have been obsolete, so you really can't. You have to redo the system.
Okay.
That's
good to know that we're moving ahead with that.
The roofing system was almost obsolete by the time
it was put on.
Not just that it failed, but I think they stopped using that roof like maybe a year or two later.
Of course
they
did.
That's later, you should tell them.
The space study that is going to also include a couple of details of the law enforcement center, that I imagine the outcome of that could potentially impact the roofing decision for the law enforcement center, right? If we decided to, you know, build off of it for a garage for the sheriff or something along those lines. I'm not saying we would, that's what the study is for. But is that the type of thing where if we don't think about how those are going to line up, we might end up doing roof replacement and then needing to change it again?
I don't think we would. It's a roof is a roof, so the current footprint would be replaced, the roof.
Right.
If you're going to add a garage, it's going to be a separate roof. Like, if look at the DSS building. I believe the DSS building is actually three separate roofs, because those are like three separate buildings.
Right.
So even though there was an expansion, it wouldn't affect this.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
The design cost is that in total or just for the roof? I thought generally engineers received about 10% of what the total cost would be, which is usually how you can figure it out. So it's $1 million in design and $900,000 in construction.
Yeah, which one are you talking about? So this whole capital is multiple roofs. So the design is multiple designs. So when you look at, you have fiscal year 2023, $100,000 in design and $1.9 in construction, which is 5%. So on these roofs, it's not a full 10% A&E design. We're budgeting 5%.
Okay, I was looking at the top.
The
it looks like it says 400,000, but on the first page, on 160, it says 1 million. So this particular project is going to be 400,000 in design. Disregard the million. The really teeny tiny print.
Yeah, under description.
So we've got 400,000 in overall design for 7.6 million in potential construction.
So this was.
Which, like you said, is 5%, not 10% AE on it. We bumped that.
Okay.
I think we have to relook at the project just to true it up. We'll take a look. I said, okay.
Yeah, so is there a benefit to lumping all the roofs in one capital project overall versus looking at them individually? Is there a benefit to the county or getting a rate on who's doing this work and do design work and all that?
Last year we bid two together, and I think we did get a lower. This year we just finished the Hall of Records. Actually, we finished it in December, and we just did one. So
It's hard to say.
Yeah. Next year we're going to do UCLEC, and then the following year, we're following buildings DSS.
Okay.
That's how we do bridges, actually.
Right. Yeah.
We design and build and improve. groups, especially some that are located next to each other, so we get that savings.
I also think just to understand what we are expending overall, like for roofs in the county, having it be one project or program as opposed to separate may be beneficial.
Okay, thanks.
All right, page 163, solar array siting project.
Okay, this is a new capital program in the program. You can see the narrative there. It basically gives us the ability to site whether we want rooftop solar arrays on carports, and actually we will be coming back to you in January, I believe, to use this capital to put some solar panels on Hall Records roof.
So it would be helpful to know with this also kind of the specifics of where this is going to happen. And the reason why I'm asking, not only is it useful to know some specifics, but I would wonder why we're waiting so long. You know, like, this is $200,000 a year for the next, like, I'd rather do this sooner than later. Is there a reason for stretching this out this way?
Partially is when you do a roof, that's the opportune time to put solar on it. So, like, if you're finishing something up, then you wouldn't have to, like, if you did it in the middle of the life cycle, then you're going to have to take off the panels in order to replace the roof.
Right, so I guess I'll ask in a different way.
Okay.
Is there a thought that, I don't know what $200,000 gets you, is that like two roofs a year? Or, four, like, what does that translate to? Potentially, more or less.
I don't know.
But
we don't know at this point.
But is it closer to one or closer to 20?
We're hoping at least three.
Three a year.
Well, it all depends on if you're doing three carports or if you're doing
law enforcement center.
Okay, there's a...
Yeah, we just got a price for design for the Hall of Records back. It was around $50,000 for the design.
Oh, wow.
For the design?
For the design.
No, I'm talking about with the $200,000 construction costs, how many roofs should we think in the end of a year would have solar on them as a result of that price?
$50,000 design, one.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I want to know. Is that, does that translate to one a year for 6 years, or does that translate to three a year? Because my point being, and I'll just say it for Mana's sake, you know, if it is, that means six solar roofs in 6 years, we may want to put more money in and get 12. So
I think that's fair. I think that we can maybe look at some of the past projects and maybe look at a more fair assessment based on the roofs we have upcoming. Like, we just went through a whole roof replacement program, so we know what will be happening in the next few years. Maybe that, just in I'm thinking in terms of size, right, to give you more trued up estimates, we can look at those individual buildings and maybe give a better estimate at what we think those out year costs would be. Is that?
Yeah, that would be great. And okay. I assume some of this isn't just tied to fixing a roof, right?
No,
I mean, there's got
to
be some opportunity.
Parking lots,
right.
When we pay parking lot,
right.
Like that,
yeah.
But if we're sort of on our side, the policy of saying, like, we're committed to getting more solar, it's nice to know what we're agreeing to. Yeah.
Okay.
Actually, let's...
No, I'll let
All right, 166 Trudy Farber Building repairs.
Again, this is another light renovation project. We're finishing an HVAC project right now down at that building. We own that building, and we're going to be going in painting, light masonry, exterior doors, things like that.
So is it empty now? What is it used for? Yeah, okay.
But that is something that we hope to
Health and social services.
This WIC program, the health department, some social services programs.
Not as much mental health as there was.
Aging,
aging does some of their congregate meals and different services there, but it is a limited use, yes.
So is there plans with this to actually expand and use that space more?
Not with this necessarily. I mean, this is minor improvements in 2025, but there, I think, is an idea that we need to bring more services to that building.
Yeah.
Probably with the
I'll just speak from having a meeting down there with Nate and the group. As we discovered by the buildings guy who works down there, all the space is being used but 1 or 2 days a week.
Right.
So
that's
each
what
group
I would
has their space, but they're only in it 1 or 2 days a week. So most of the time the building is unutilized.
Right. Which then creates this impression to people that this is not a place they can go for services if they're going to walk in and half of the rooms are empty. So I know a couple of years ago did a needs assessment in Ellenville, and even though these services are there, people in the community are saying, like, I don't really believe they are here. And I think if you walk into this building and you see most offices empty, I could see where that impression comes from.
Besides design, we're doing it in-house through DPW?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yes. That's the plan.
That'd be that's nice in the details as well on a project.
Not the HVAC.
Right.
Just
every.
But, all right. Yeah, but that'd be great. That's not a... That's not a lot. In description, I'd love to see that when we're doing the, what we're doing in-house.
That's as right. Just to make my same comment I made a couple times on this building, the parking lot across the street, if we can finally determine that it is not needed, then we can get rid of it, get it back on the tax rolls in Ellenville. That would be fantastic.
Noted.
Thank you. 172.
If we could also put the address of these buildings in the
records. That's on there.
It is where it says location.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just
right below.
I was having a hard time.
There's a GPS.
It's hard. It's very pale.
Yeah.
It's
the one next to the parking lot.
Okay.
So that's new to me.
I didn't hear what you said. I'm sorry.
We've talked to the town. We've talked to the village relative to that parking lot across the way.
Yep.
We've looked at it for mostly for EV charging stations. We've also looked at it in terms of conversations with the village in terms of using it as affordable housing.
Recently?
Yeah.
Like how recent?
Or probably 3 months ago.
Okay. It's been a couple months since the mayor and I talked about this, but he wanted it back on the tax roll if it could possibly get back on the roll.
Yeah,
so
I talked to the village manager and we had a conversation about this as well. But that would be back on the tax roll. It would just be back on the tax roll in the fourth time.
Okay. All right. 172, water and sewer line placement for the county building.
That's a new capital. And it's slated for 2025-26 to repair and replace the entire sewer and water lines in this building.
So I assume that's that it doesn't need it now, and you're expecting that it will. I'm just sort of surprised that it's so pushed out.
We feel that it can last. It's
nearing end
last.
Of life.
Right, and so okay, 2025, logical?
I think so, but I think so part of this is also balancing our ability to manage the array of projects, so...
And also, that's just design. 2026 is really
construction, but even managing a consultant for design requires internal resources, and with all the other projects, I think that we felt that this could be pushed out and we could continue to repair as needed.
Okay. Hopefully the building agrees.
Yes, thank you. So, do you foresee a disruption in services during this construction? Because it does say it's going to be doing internal and external.
For here?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're going to be shutting off different floors in order to repipe everything, then absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm just basing that also off of repiping my house during the pandemic. So, yeah, I mean, that's inevitable. And already we have the filtered water, so I'm not worried about that type of disruption.
Yeah.
But I think when we get into that planning stage, we'll have to consider what we'll have to offer to the employees as the project gets staged out, right? Just to make sure that everybody has access to what they need or bathrooms, how that's affected. We'll
temporary relocation possibility of offices?
Per floor, potentially.
Per floor?
Yeah.
Potentially,
yeah. Okay. Thank you.
You're giving me future anxiety. Thank you. That's later day.
That's what I'm here for.
All right. Page 200, Emergency Management Mobile Command Post.
That's so far away.
Can I just start by the taxes number, page 184? I know it has a project number. It hasn't been funded, and I know it went to the Capital Project Committee this past month, and I figured I'd just address it in both committees now.
Okay.
Is that all right?
Yeah.
So we do need a new tax system. I think I brought this in 2019, and with COVID, it's been delayed. Went out for an RFP
The system we have in place now is over 35 years old. It's green screen, and Alan's forcing me off the mainframe, which is a good thing. And the system that we've gone out for is used by 21 counties, so it does address the New York State tax law. It will allow online payments. We're also going to offer it to the towns. They can opt in to use the same program. For them, it's roughly $2,000 a year for maintenance. And they'll be able to see our information. We'll be able to see theirs. It'll probably take about 6 months to go live once we implement. And I'll work with the town to see if they want to opt in.
I assume by town, you mean towns, villages, and school districts?
Yeah.
Cool.
And there's over roughly 200 municipalities in here. So it's a good system. System's easy.
Can I back up to page 178, the environment? I don't know if they're here, the EV charging stations. So the backup describes 4 fleet support EV charging stations and 4 community located charging stations. I would just ask that we take a hard look at this. If we're really talking about electrifying the fleet to the extent that we are, this is probably too little over too long of a period. And also, I would respectfully ask that we look at the latest and greatest in charging, because it's come a long way since we first put the technology in. Mm-hmm. So you want to have charging stations that charge rapidly, which I know is like a whole different work, and it's probably not going to cut it $80,000 a year.
Yeah. So one thing that I'll say that we're looking at that would be outside of this capital is charging as a service. So that is companies coming in. They don't charge the county anything. They would install. They would do all of the work, and then they would take the payment. I think we could still restrict what they would charge. That would all be part of the RFP. The Department of the Environment is looking at that right now, and that would really help bolster what we have out there.
That would be great. So if we could just think about, again, maybe amending this, getting much more aggressive with it. But I'm glad to know they're going to do that. Thank you.
Dennis, let's just go to Dennis for a second.
Yep. No, I was going to mention what Mark mentioned, which is that software as a service is what they're currently looking at.
Yeah, so does anybody know if there's such a thing as a parking meter charging station combo? I mean, because that's really where we're going to end up, right?
Well, all charging stations are, in effect, parking meters.
They are.
Well, you plug them in and they charge you.
That's right. You know,
and yet they charge you more when you're done charging.
Right.
I mean, if you're occupying the space.
Yeah, right.
Well, I mean, here we have 2 hours for free, and then anything after that's 50 cents an hour. So, yeah, if you're not even charging, you're still getting charged the 50 cents an hour just for being in the space.
I mean, we're talking 10 years, right? Really, we're going to have a majority electric fleet, you know, in the county, in the state, and electric cars are, you know, gas power cars are being phased out, right? So we should be taking a much broader look at this, in my mind, you know, especially when we're talking about upgrading parking lots and building buildings and, you know, working in conjunction with the city of Kingston that has all these parking meters everywhere you turn around, right? And other municipalities, we should really be looking at that, because inevitably that's what it will be, right?
So the other thing is that Patterns for Progress is currently working on a region-wide study in EV charging stations, so we're working with them as well on a region-wide study. Just a quick note, there's been look at trying to actually use parking meters and turning them into charging stations. There are some real concerns with respect to that, not only in terms of maintenance, but also the more you basically move charging from essentially off-peak hours to on-peak hours, you're charging during the daylight hours during coming in and beginning charge, the more it creates problems for your demand response with respect to your utilities. Utilities are really concerned to start charging into the regular hours and moving to off
point.
Yeah, you know, this is something where government has to be careful too. With when it comes to UCAT or our vehicles that are, we can think about that and have hubs that we can use. But with regards to being part of the process of building out charging infrastructure, one, we have to make sure the fastest top of the line. I know my town has put some cheap ones in that aren't much good, especially with regards to trying to get people to
you know, tourism-wise. But nobody knows fueling cars like gas stations and Stewart's and Quick Check, and we should really be looking to short-term incentivize the private sector to do the job more so than us doing the job when it comes to charging stations. They know they're located in the hub type touristy shopping centers already. That's why they're there. They've been fueling cars for our entire existence, and now I think we should go that route more. I mean, even talking to our IDA, our EDA is something I could live with if it was short term, but incentivizing some of these companies that are already starting to do it on their own, maybe to do it a little faster.
So I think that at the federal level, that's definitely happening, and it's filtering down through the state in order to build out the larger networks. To your point, I guess when we're looking at the charging stations is where they can be duly purposed and located for benefit for the fleet and also for the public. I don't envision us being the ones to build out a countywide network and manage it. I think you're right. That is where the private sector is going to have to step in. That's not something that we have expertise or desire to do at this time.
And that's the whole charging as a service. That's not us building. That's like allowing through an RFP somebody to use some of our space. But to Dennis's point, the Pattern for Progress study is going to not just talk about kind of county government and charging. It's what is there in those three counties, Orange, Dutchess, and Ulster, and where we should really be building out to ensure that there isn't, that we're filling in gaps, not just from a county government perspective, but every kind of
community.
Right.
Really?
Every community.
Yeah.
Thanks. But, you know, as we imagine or as we look forward to our entire fleet being electrified, we are going to need more capacity for our fleet, and we're going to need to be thinking strategically for the portion of our fleet that's traveling long miles in each day, but potentially the sheriff's office and DSS, I don't know, others who may, I mean, I think functionally most, many electric vehicles could rely on just charging overnight, but in those types of vehicles, depending on how many hours they're driving the day and what type of use they're using, they might need to have a recharge strategically around the county. So that's where I think there's going to be an intersection between Pattern's work
and
the private sector and what we're doing. But I did really mean about our build out being related to our fleet and that build out.
Yeah, one last tangential question on this. Have you guys looked at portable emergency chargers like they have some of the services that go out and say you have we have a county vehicle that's stuck out in Peekamoose somewhere because their battery died. What is our, we would end up throwing it on a tow truck and pulling it back, right?
No, but I think just in terms of what my area is of like direct management, when, I'm looking straight at Everett, who would be the first one because they deploy pretty much everywhere, and we're including in capital this year for multiple vehicles, and some will be plug-in hybrid.
Yeah.
I have not considered that. Lauren?
So we're procuring those support vehicles, and those do come with an option where you could get the emergency plug-ins.
Yeah.
It'll give you, enough to get to
a gallon of gas,
a few extra miles, but not much. Yeah. It's a slower charge too, with it. But they do provide those as a
good.
The new F-150 Ford comes with a jumper cable, so you can plug it in the back of a Ford and plug it in another electric vehicle.
And jump it.
Or to give it a 40-mile range or something like that.
My brother has one.
Something of my Ford. Yeah, I saw
it. Okay. Page 200, the local command post.
Yeah. Yeah, I have nothing else to do in January.
Yeah, the mobile command post is to replace our current mobile command post that's just under 20 years old. It gets deployed for larger scale incidents. It was deployed at the most recent woods fire that we had. And what it does is it ties in communications among all response agencies. So, for example, the woods fires, we had parks, we had the DEC, we had the sheriff's office, we had all the local fire departments. So if they're operating on some of their own frequencies, we're able to tie everybody in, make sure everybody's able to communicate amongst each other. It helps with the range as well. When you're in some bad biography areas.
It's one.
We have satellite capabilities on it as well. So currently what we're seeing is our vehicle, we're dumping a lot of money into it to for the fixes. Because it keeps on breaking down. The technology is older, you know, it's 20 years old now, and we need to kind of advance that. So.
Yeah, is this building for $500,000? I would think it would be. Is this vehicle can it be repurposed for something like mobile mental health, or is it just really beyond its useful life?
Oh, so the vehicle now.
The vehicle itself.
It's a pretty big Freightliner.
Oh, okay.
It's not like it's a.
We could push it to auction though, right? I mean.
Yeah, I would assume we. It was purchased off a grant, but I mean that grant
20 years
well,
ago.
20 years ago, so
yeah.
We have to look into that.
Oh, I was looking at this.
That's the new one. That's the new one. But so this one, obviously, much smaller than.
Much more. Well, we're looking more of a Sprinter van. A lot of counties are going to something a little bit more mobile. You know, 20 years ago, that's what you would purchase. Now we're looking at the Sprinter type vans to hold two or three people to handle strictly communications. Mm-hmm.
203 Brazos upgrade.
What page?
203.
Okay.
There was a big accident on 32.
206 facility garage for the sheriff's also. And in town lot. Sheriff's facility garage and impound yard.
This was us breaking out the impound and the garage. So at one point it was a combined garage. I think the sheriff had somewhat of an issue having like both DPW and his office having shared access to the facility.
They just confiscated 1,000 guns. I mean, it's unrealistic to have
exactly.
DPW
so that's why we broke them out and.
Yeah, I mean, we concur that this is needed and that it's appropriate to have his stuff segregated from the others.
And we're looking to do this on the
on-site,
next to the GOP.
Yeah.
212 Bearcat G3.
So this is to replace the existing MRAP and go with something that is, I don't know what the term, but less militaristic in the sense that Bearcats are more prevalent in law enforcement than the MRAP is, which is a surplus military vehicle.
I got a lot of pushback when we purchased that Humvee years ago, even though it was used during Irene. Are they used often? And I mean, $325,000 again, is it because it's military issue?
I would have
and does it have to be capital? I mean, it's a vehicle.
It has to be capital, yeah, especially at that expense. And we do capitalize almost all, 90%, I would say, fair enough, like 90% of all vehicle purchases are capitalized. In terms of specific use and frequency, I would defer to the sheriff's office.
Okay.
So I think that's more appropriate for him to answer.
Doesn't he have one already?
Yeah.
This
is
the MRAP. That's the MRAP that we're looking for.
Which we're looking to.
Yeah, MRAP is mine resistant armored vehicle that was surplus from the military. This is built for more of a law enforcement purpose.
I think in here it says 90,000 to maintain the MRAP just over a short period of time. If we were to keep that in service, it's very expensive.
Wow. Okay, 215, the dishwasher at the jail.
The old dishwasher caught fire and it needs to be replaced.
Everything is catching fire.
Makes sense to just look at the whole kitchen and just figure. I mean, it just seems like we keep fixing one thing here and one thing there, and it gets a lot of use. You know, is it time to examine the entire facility and see if it needs...
Like the kitchen facility?
Yeah.
I mean, that's how we treat our own places, right? One thing breaks and then you go for that, and they don't all have the same life cycle of use.
But it seems like
I think 20 years into this, is this is what's going to happen, right? It's from use that certain components are going to die.
Right. I guess I'll put it a different way. Because also, this thing kind of happens where it's already breaking, and now you're putting it in a capital plans. But, you know, if something goes wrong, then before the next capital plan, you're going to come to us. So it feels like if there was a kind of, you know, just like an inspector, when I buy a house, can say, like, this has got this much time, this has got this much time. It just might be worth knowing that we have the necessary money allocated so that should something go in the middle of 2023, we've already been planning for it.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
So I'll just add that in the space study, they're also doing a conditions analysis of each of the facilities, so something like this would be noted in there if there was. I mean, this is original to the facility. It was from 2005. I think it's probably dated.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, the fact that it's here means you need it. It's my concern is the thing you don't have on the capital plan.
The washer's machine.
Because something's going to, we're going to be hit with something. And none of these are inexpensive.
Right. So at that point, we would come to you and amend the capital program in an emergency kind of.
Well, we could also just have the
camera system.
Somebody with the sheriff's office and maybe even building some ground go back and look at the existing equipment and do at least some type of analysis to say, when was it installed? What's the typical life cycle, right?
Like, right. And then I think it takes pressure off of the sheriff, too, because he knows that the money's been allocated so that if something goes dreadfully wrong, we can prove it faster.
I will say that the sheriff has spoken to a number of individuals or legislators I know, I assume the executive's wing, about at some point in the future wanting to redo the cafeteria there and some of the kitchen to provide a little more ability for the CEOs to eat. Right now, there's no, if you're stuck there in a double, you have no ability. We don't have the infrastructure there for them to even have a sandwich or make themselves a sandwich. So he's got the specifics on that, but that could, obviously we need this, but there could be more we wanted to do. I thought, was that something we're getting a study done on as well, or no? That was interior. I know
there's the
talking about the
contract.
Exterior.
There's the food contract, which affects the COs and their food.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and then there's the space study, which I don't think addresses that.
And we're not going interior with that.
No, they could.
I don't know that we're, like, I guess I have to consider that. And are we going to get that tactical in terms of interior space use for, it's not like we're changing departments out, right? We're trying to get a better use out of, more efficient use for the CEOs out of the existing space. I think that's a bit more in depth than our
just
needs assessment. Instead of just moving people or seeing where we have vacancies. But, right, I mean, I thought that's what we were doing.
I don't know how movable this massive unit would be. My point is, if they ended up wanting to place it in a different
part of the room,
not probably not a different part, but a different location in that space.
Could be considered. Mark was just mentioning that if we're moving, the EOC space opens up, which we currently occupy, which does free up and is next to the jail space. It shares the wall.
Potentially long term, there may be, if we're moving things out, although it'll always be a backup EOC, but they may be able to use it more as like a break room, if that's what you're talking about, that kind of thing.
To me, that sounds like a separate consultant design, looking at the sheriff's space for specific purposes and needs rather than an overall county space study. Initial thought.
No, I was just going to say that a few of the legislators availed themselves of a tour with some COs and the sheriff, and I think he's got a pretty good handle on what he needs, and he put this forth because he needs a new dishwasher. A year ago, we replaced the washers and dryers. So, I mean, he knows his operation. This is what he's asking for. I mean, I don't know. We don't need really to get into his business too much. We got enough of our own to do.
All right, 235, asphalt overlay to various roads.
This is a program that's done every 3 years. It's a top coat on various roads that are paved in the previous 3 years before that. So it extends the life of the roads.
When you have a chance, can you just provide us with the list of the planned roads?
Yes.
Thank you.
Brought this up last year and I'll bring it up again. Can we please look into a asphalt reclamation machine?
Mm-hmm.
Can we look? I know it's about it was about $2.2 million probably 7 or 8 years ago when I was on the town board, but your payback is like 4 years, and that was within Worthing. Countywide, I got to imagine it's going to be a much shorter payback because it doesn't use, and this manable love, it doesn't use any more materials really other than what it chews it up, it puts it into a hopper, mixes it with oil, and lays it back down hot again, and you're not having to add new, you're just taking what's there and reclaiming it.
She won't let you out.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, right, so if I may, so do you work in conjunction with the towns, right? That's when, with the CHIPS funding and things like that, where you lease a machine and then the towns and the county do work in unison, multiple towns and the county repaving roads throughout the county on schedule, or?
For reclamation, is we contract out. We bid services.
You're right. Do you do shared services with the towns with that, is my question?
Not with that specifically.
They are able to. They are able to piggyback off of our bids if they choose. If they choose.
So if we were to purchase that, right, would that streamline that process and make it cheaper for everybody?
The problem with purchasing equipment like that, including rollers as well, which we lease on a summer, like during per job or during the summer.
Yeah.
Is the life of the machine,
yeah.
Especially like rollers, they vibrate themselves and they fall apart. So your maintenance on those machines, it doesn't make sense to purchase them outright.
Okay.
And it's probably similar to the machine.
But we can look into it.
We can look into it. Yeah.
Well, or any reclamation is considered recycling and waste reduction. So there's non-competitive DEC grants. And I would look into that. We can get up to $2 million on a $4 million project.
But could we get it on the equipment?
Right. So
we
can do the reclamation projects, like we just contracted out, as opposed to having the equipment.
Mm-hmm. Get on the equipment.
So it'd be it could be millions in terms of a single expense, and then to maintain the equipment going forward. So we could do some type of analysis.
I mean, in the
have
past.
A real short season too, right? Where we can do this work as compared to, the rental company will then move south,
right.
Say, for example, right? Yeah.
We've talked about doing this with striping in the past. I know legislators have brought that up. I think Chair Bartels. But again, it was like handling of the toxic. Like it's just the whole handling of hazardous materials, which I think also goes with the recording.
Maybe we just do the.
Yeah, take a look at it.
Did they do
it? Right?
No, of course, share services went away because everybody knows
Herb.
DOT studies this every year, whether it's cheaper to buy equipment and do the work themselves or put it out to bid. They're experts at it, so instead of us chasing our tail, you can just contact them. They'll tell you, which is why they don't stripe roads anymore. It costs more to stripe the road. And own the equipment and do pavement striping than it is to put it out to bid. So,
you could probably reach out to Region 8 and just see if they got any kind of internal analysis.
Talk to Glenn Boucher, he's the highway engineer for
Region 8. Well, can you check with other municipalities that have done it through shared services and counties just to see if they've had success and see if they've done it and they own this piece of equipment?
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. 262 Golden Hill Roads.
So we pushed this project out to be determined because of the construction up on Golden Hill. We do not want to repave the roads going up there with having heavy equipment coming up there. It was just patched last week. There were some pretty big potholes up there, so we did patch it, cold patch it.
So that it's
slated for 2022.
And do push it past the construction of our bus garage, too.
Yeah, everything should be after all that.
What about a traffic light?
Which one do you want?
Golden Hill Road.
Gold.
Are you including a traffic light in with the roads up there?
I don't, not in this capital.
But we will be doing the roads, whether it's sold or not, by that point.
We have, we own...
Yeah, you're talking about different parts. I was specifically...
County-owned.
This is the county-owned part?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes. All right. We would love to get this road to the city, but I don't think they've indicated that they want to take it.
304 Golden Hill Transportation Improvement.
This is 265.
This is your... Well, hold on a second. Let's go back to 265.
Mm-hmm. It's just... 265 is guide rail replacement program. And I was told that as recently as 5 or 6 years ago, if there was damage done to the rails by a motorist, that we always went in through their insurance, and that it's not being done now, which is several hundred thousand a year because it's an expensive project. Do we intend to start getting incident reports from the local law enforcement or whomever is involved so that we can reimburse ourselves for damages done by motorists?
I mean, I have to look into that question. I don't have the answer right away. I mean, I wouldn't say that all of it's being replaced at several hundred thousand dollars just due to accidents, though, because that over time
But there's a lot of damage by motorists, too.
Okay. We'll research the question and get back to you.
Okay. 304 Golden Hill Transportation Improvement.
This is the light Laura was talking about.
The light in the gate.
Pretty good there, huh?
304.
A number?
304.
What's up?
So where's the gate going?
I did. I told them.
At the nursing facility.
Ah, okay.
So that nobody can leave to go to Glen Street from the facility.
So they're going to have to go around.
Yes.
Okay. 307 bus shelters.
That's good news.
So this one is in response to a lot of discussion with legislators, including Legislator Stewart and others at the table, where we recognize the need to standardize and also help municipalities improve the existing bus shelters. So this, and I do want to preface that, like, a lot more research has to be done in terms of setting the standard and cost. So this is true placeholder, but it is to signal the intention that we want to do this.
So can you just talk a little bit about innovations? I'm just wondering specifically on assuring that individuals have access to the schedule. I know we have an app that shows where it is. Is there a way that these bus shelters will reveal exactly where their bus is?
I think there's a potential there, and some of these are done via contract where the municipalities maintain them. So what we're looking to do is build them to some type of standard spec, and then from there still maintain the agreement. We have to work through that part of it, but yes, I think the intention is there, and I think the capability exists. It's just how much will that cost in the end, and how many can we do each year?
And then I don't know what ended up happening, but there was this pilot, I thought, of a on-call small bus that was once proposed to us. Does this sound familiar to anyone but me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but not a bus.
You're talking about the electric microtransit?
Yes,
from
microtransit.
Atlanta Clean Energy.
And
so November 16th, NYSERDA will announce those who won that award.
So, okay. So just for the, you know, on the shelf, you know, one of the challenges with that system is individuals who don't necessarily have an app or whatever, that it would be useful that the shelters provide the capacity to call the bus so that someone doesn't need to have an iPhone, a smartphone. They can actually call from a bus shelter.
And
that technology was also used where people could also still call in to our offices and get same level of service as if they were using the app.
Right, but it's even easier if you can wait in a bus shelter. For the bus also, because other people might want to use the micro bus, but I feel like an easiest thing is that they can go to a shelter, wait away from the rain, and press a button.
Well, they can go to their house. I mean, so the idea of the electric microtransit would be that you would call in if you had to, call dispatch, and they would direct you to a bus stop that was within a quarter of a mile, like a virtual bus stop, which could be your house, especially if you had mobility issues. But if there was three or four calls at once, it might be a place that was within a quarter mile of a bunch of different.
No,
it wouldn't necessarily be a fixed bus shelter.
But a fixed bus shelter is a really good place, and it's protected, and people are aware of it. So if they're like, go to that bus shelter, they would know. And again, having that ability, because I hope that there's a time when we have more of those buses, that, you know, to just keep in mind that concept of being able to go to a fixed bus shelter and request the bus.
So I think to the one point is, if, and this all depends on cost, right? Like, we have dozens of bus shelters throughout the county, and if we were, and if our desire is to have the ability to dynamically update them, right? Like, to have a live and active schedule on there, which would tell people on time, or if something's canceled or delayed, I think that's like, that's what we'd love to get to, depending on the cost, of course. We would have the ability to have that direct communication line, because it would be a connected bus shelter. I would also say, though, this couldn't happen with all bus shelters. Not all bus shelters are maintained in the same way by the municipalities or by us. You see them up and down some of our kind of, you know, flag stops, where they're just wooden shelters on kind of private property. Like, I'm not thinking in terms of those. I have to get a better assessment of where they are and how those operate. I'm thinking of more of like in New Paltz and in the populated area where we have actual fixed bus stops with shelters currently,
right,
how we get those to that kind of degree. But with connectivity gives you tons of options over time.
But you may want to consider like the places that don't have really good bus shelters should use it. I mean, if we want to convert people, you know, really create an environment where people are thinking public transportation, then a crappy shelter on a person's property may be worthy of renovating into a nice shelter, maybe even if it's a little further
smaller,
over. But
yes.
Thank you. So you just answered some of my questions. So I was thinking, yes, so the city of Kingston is probably going to be the major, get the major bulk of these shelters, I'm assuming, because of the 26 fixed route stops that we have.
Right.
And then secondly, I would think SUNY Ulster would be one of the places, maybe I-Park 87, where there's a big hub there as well, right? Is that what we're talking about here?
Yeah.
And then you would have kind of like a New York City subway saying this is where you're...
But that's, yeah, I mean, again, like, that's like the way and degree, and we haven't costed that out. I mean, I'm thinking at very base level to be able to do what we're talking about, you have to first build in connectivity.
Right.
And then invest in that type of technology over time. And from what I'm hearing from individual legislators about their own districts is the condition that the current bus shelters are in is so shoddy,
right,
that I think we first have to work with the municipalities and others to, like, just make them respectable,
right?
And make them decent enough shelters. And during that process, we can think forward and say, let's at least make sure we have a fiber connection or some type of cellular modem that allows us to build for the future. I just don't want to promise too much right now while just trying to get, honestly, just consistent and respectable. That's the goal. I
agree 100% with you.
The end.
Good. Thank you,
Roberto.
Yeah, I was just going to echo what Legislator Walter said, just one step in front of the other. I get it. But I do think that uniformity, and particularly out in the outer reaches, you know, when we get beyond where you're exactly what you're talking about, where you're talking about shelters that are, you know, maybe just wooden shelters on a semi-private property, that in itself could be an impediment to the, utilizing our transit system. And I think that if we think of these shelters as an opportunity to put our best foot forward and put the best spin on the system in the community itself, wherever we're meeting the community, I really think it's an incredible opportunity. So we'll shoot for the moon, and we'll see where we end up, and we know that eventually we want to see the connectivity and solar, and but at the basic, I think it needs to be a big step up over where we are now, and uniform. Mm-hmm. So
we want to make them attractive, right? We talked about that from day one. Funky, when we're waiving the fee and all that, is like we want to bring people to use that. The shelters are a big part of that, in my view.
Right. We'll engage the guy who did the I voted sticker for a designer.
Well, let's not do that.
I think we do.
Legislator Walter.
Relative to that, you know, I know we're skipping over only things that are new, so I assume I didn't miss this somewhere, because unless it was already there, and you can correct me. But what I would hope to see is some really innovative capital project that is a massive upgrade of those buses. Like, we talked about recovering all of them. We talked about, you know, so am I missing it? Is it in here somewhere? Like this, like, we're going to take our buses and change the whole look of them, the whole feel of them.
We're electrifying the entire fleet, and we're going from $400,000 diesels to $1 to $1.2 million electric buses. So the innovation is getting the most modern and environmentally friendly buses that are on the market. So that's our goal.
But what else are we doing?
You're talking about
to do like the covers.
To talk about wrapping.
Well, it's wrapping, promotion, like everything to make it just the highest.
But we can do that through existing contracts with timely signs.
I get it. I just wanted to see, because this is like, this is a representation of what our vision is of what we're going to do. And I feel like I'd like to see that there's this project that says we're going to, in the next 2 years, you're going to see a whole new transportation system.
You're going to see an entirely new fleet over the next 5 or 6 years in terms of going from diesel to electric.
I hear that.
To me, that is the literal most expensive and most significant upgrade we can make to the fleet. In terms of how they appear, that is something that can and does change over time when people buy ads or we do different things. That's not fixed. We can do bus wraps, I guess. That's something different. That's not capital.
Right, and I don't mean literally
that's
just
operation.
Wraps. I think the whole idea of knowing that you've sat down and said, what do we need to do with our transportation system so that it is like it has never been before, so that people are taking it all over the place, and that kind of like plan is in place for us.
So I think that's a few different pieces, though. That's operations in terms of our scheduling and routing and making sure we're better able to like get people to and from school or work or to the places they need to go. So that's more of an operations planning part, which we're engaged in. And then in terms of the fleet, again, like, when we're buying the most modern technology on the that exists today, I don't think we can go further than that. Mm-hmm. We can change how they're wrapped. We can change how they appear. We can do those things whenever we choose to. So I guess, yes, there's the operations piece, but the major capital piece is charging infrastructure and electric buses.
So we're crystal clear, we're going from a model of having 6 to 7 different variations of style of vehicles to 2 styles of vehicles, a 35-foot battery electric vehicle, and then a 100% all-electric for transit, e-transit connect, to handle that micro-transit demand response of ADA style of transportation. To get to your aesthetics of how it looks, every vehicle, we agreed upon a style for the electric buses with the wrap. That same image and imagery is going to be transposed onto the smaller vehicles as well. So you guys will see in next month when we get those new vehicles delivered that that same imagery is there. Now you start seeing a cohesion across the fleet. You won't see what you see right now, a old UCAT logo from, you know, 10, 15 years ago mixed with our new Flyer, new buses that have this brand new imagery there. We're working collectively with, you know, Mark me internally to do a branding message that will be consistent and can last throughout time. We are going to stabilize how we do advertising on our vehicles so it's not hotbatched, just stuck on the side of our vehicles and looking like a hot mess. Sorry, my French, but some of our vehicles do when they put the imagery up there. were to standardize where they could put ad locations on there, so it makes sure that it falls in lines with, you know, the county's wishes, you know, no tobacco, no alcohol, those things, making sure that we are also linking up with other county departments and promoting activities, events, whatever, to really engage the community. When we talk about carefree, you know, our plan is to have a marketing plan going out in 2023 to work with each of the towns and municipalities so they could do a design, a bus, and we'll make sure that vehicle goes into their area. So, say for instance, the example I could give is Woodstock, you know. Let's do the tie-dye bus wrap that's centered towards Woodstock that will promote that engagement with community and everything. So we do have some long-term plans that we are looking for to kind of address those specific issues, but also being structured to ensure that we're staying within the bounds of the capital projects and plans.
Perfect. That's just fine. Legislator Petit, Colony, Chair Bartels, and then Legislator King.
You can scratch your
hand. Thank you. I'd like to go back to the issue of bus shelters, but I would also like to see any funding that comes out of the marketing UCAT buses are used for to go back into UCAT instead of going into a general revenue fund. But as far as the bus shelters go, I've been discussing this with Legislator Stewart and Erner. It's not enough, and you should have at least $750,000 in this capital improvement. There's 24 municipalities. You need at least 48 shelters. Each of the shelters, and I love the idea about putting in a kiosk. The original thought was just signage. And also a major terminal that's environmentally or climate controlled. And when they do the standardized design, the ones up at SUNY I was talking to some of the students about, and it's got a 2-foot buffer on the bottom. They said it gets very cold, even though it's nice to get out of the rain. But it's $250,000 is not enough.
Okay.
With regards to the bus shelters, perhaps it's going to be basic what we do, which I agree with, but obviously looking at whether it's fiberglass or something that's going to not be something we have to replace, and when we're ready to add the infrastructure of being able to communicate with the buses and with UCAT, having those shelter, the basic bus shelter that we purchased, be able to be upgraded, maybe if that exists. With regards to the last conversation, I just think, look, I want to uniform the buses. I appreciate what you're saying, and that makes perfect sense to me. Going beyond that and spending time and energy and money that could be put into services. I got a phone call today at my store. A guy started out at the homeless shelter next to me. He's now got custody. He was formerly incarcerated, has custody of his son now, and he was happy. He had mentioned the bus fares being free, and to tell all the people he used to do driveways and landscaping behind my store, he called me. He said, tell all those people I'm going to be able to get out there easier now. Line up some work for me. So I love what we're doing. I love but it's about services, about being on time. It's about the infrastructure, being able to communicate with you guys. Don't put too much energy into tie-dyeing buses, all right? And don't do away with the money totally of the, I don't care if Al Minetti's face is on the side of it. I'd rather not see Derek Spada's face. But nonetheless, if they're paying us, take the money, make them look as good as you can, and let's focus on services more than anything else. I'm really getting sick and tired of this, the pizzazz and making it cool. I think it's honestly, we're a bunch of people that are doing well in life. I think sometimes it's a little patronizing. The people that really need to use these buses just want them to be on time. I've not heard one complaint about a seat not being comfortable or it not being cool enough looking. Anyone using public transit wants it on time and consistent, and they want to be able to communicate, and that's what we're after. But just enough with the tie-dye nonsense.
So the budget team was poking me, the revenues from the ads do go to UCAT. Legislator Petit, the money from the ads goes to UCAT's budget.
It does go to your budget. Okay, it was my understanding it did not. Thank you for clarifying.
In terms of so I hear you loud and clear on not enough, and
it's
often
not.
We're told we put in too much, but that's fair. What we really need to do is engage a consultant this is not our expertise. We don't build bus shelters. I don't know that we've engaged in this, Dennis.
Yeah, we have bus shelters.
We have a policy with respect to bus shelters, which any community could request them, but they had a responsibility
to maintain them.
Right. And the problem that you have is even if you put them out there, nobody shovels them out, and somebody throws up in them or something else, and they're just not maintained at the local level. So when you start taking multiple shelters and you don't have any county staff to essentially maintain them, then you got real issues where, and we've had this discussion in the past, there's some notorious shelters out there which were not maintained despite repeated requests, the municipality having signed the agreement to maintain them.
Right, but then it's on the municipality, and there's 11 of those, correct?
I think there's more than there used to be more than that, but some of them have gone away. But it's, I mean, bus shelters are standard. I mean, they're something that we need to do. Sometimes we have suggested that we buy them with county money rather than federal dollars because of some of the federal rules, and particularly with respect to the appreciation of the asset. But the idea behind shelters, you have to support, you just have to find a way to maintain.
I think it's fair to say that this may increase. I think I need to engage a professional consultant, but your point is well taken.
Okay. 313, electrification multimodal centers.
So,
313.
Excuse my voice if it goes down now, but so with this one, this is piggybacking off of a prior capital project, giving a little bit more specificity to this endeavor. So we understand that it was a prior capital project about 2-3 years ago, looking at and engaging into doing a site study, trying to find a site for us bringing on this electric fleet. We know that we have a capacity issue for our current location. This is a two-pronged approach. One is to look at our current facility right now and maximize all of its usage as far as charging capabilities for that entire site. We're currently working with NYPA right now on a phase two and a phase three approach to electrifying that entire facility, which means inclusive of putting in additional cabinets for overhead charging solutions and going beyond the three level two chargers that we have proposed for the front of the unit. This is also to push the envelope to look for us to be almost a self-contained operation. We do have slated for the installation of solar panels for the Danny Servo location. So part of that phase two approach that I'm working with NYPA on is creating solar storage units there so that we could take that solar energy and transfer that back into the garage and either charge half of our fleet, a quarter of our fleet, whatever, so then we could start being self-contained in that matter. The need here is the original plan was to look right across the road and do a storage facility for the additional buses, but that's really concentrating us in a Kingston area for a county the size of Rhode Island. We need to push a little bit further south. We need to look at what sites are available to us to go that direction so we have a multimodal center in that area, in the southern region of the county, to decrease our ride times for our passengers, but also speaking earlier about infrastructure for charging facilities, we need to make sure our charging network for UCAT is spread out and not condensed into one location.
Yeah, 100%.
We're psyched.
No, I mean, you know, all kidding aside, man, whatever, I really think that this is the time that we have to do that work, right? I mean, we're going to be in a place very shortly where we're going to be up against it and saying, well, we want to, you know, people are going to buy in to the free buses, they're going to buy in that we're doing electric buses. I think the legislature is 100% bought in supporting that, you know, in any direction that you need to go to do that. I mean, public transportation is something that we want to really emphasize and get people to use, right? And how do we do that? By giving them a service that they want to use, right? And so whatever, in my opinion, you know, whatever we can do to help you with that, to Joe's point, you know, making it a comfortable ride, making it easy for them to get there, making sure we have reliability in that service, right? You know, whatever we got to do there. I just think we're at that point, right?
Yeah, I think we are. And per the policy, we're trying to move aggressively in the direction of electrification, and the technology has it's getting better every year. I think that building out this network, looking new vaults area, looking at, like, not to bring the whole GOC conversation in, but that is part of the consideration of that multi-purpose site where I can co-locate net zero GOC next to bus charging and kind of a depot and weigh station for us to operate on the southern end of the county, where I know legislators Ronk and others will constantly remind me of the kind of service gap that we have down there. They're right. So if we're going to increase down there and we're going to do it electric, I need to have infrastructure down there as well.
And just so you guys know and are aware, I'm working right along with Nick Haase and his team. I know they're looking at plugging in charging infrastructures in the Ellenville area. We're having those discussions of how can we make sure that UCAT buses can utilize those same infrastructures there. So we're not, we're maximizing the dollars that we're investing in the infrastructures.
Yeah, I just want to commend the thought of solar and storage along with this, because if we just do beneficial electrification, either of buildings or vehicles, we're going to put more demand on the grid, and the fact that we're looking to generate and meet that demand is really critical. Otherwise, we end up burning more fossil fuel, or worse, and I won't go into detail.
Understood.
And
thank you.
Everyone, we submitted a plan to NYPA to help us with this whole process, and NYPA has come back to us and asked us if they want us to be a flagship pilot program for the state. As far as we looking at the goals of revamping our current facility and additional facilities, as far as leading the charge for the state for electrification. So, you know, there's a lot of good that we are working on behind the scenes and everything, but that's the goal. You know, we want to be leaders of this technology and how it comes with, you know, additional support from the state, so to offset some of our costs.
We actually had NYPA come here and do a presentation not that long ago. So it's great to hear that you're working on it.
All right. Next one, 316, facility modernization.
This one is pretty much leaning towards the need to upgrade Danny Circle, some of which is some of the items I talked about with the phase two, phase three of the electrification process of the facility. Some of it is basic work for our garage. Our garage was originally outfitted to maintain gasoline and diesel buses, so we want to make sure that we are revamping our garage and our storage area to properly support the fleet. That also goes to the front end of the house of operation, making sure that we have proper technology in place for our dispatchers, our customer experience representatives to engage with the public on a proper way and monitoring our overall operations.
And what I hope is the last is 322, fleet equipment and accessories.
Fleet equipment and accessories, that goes to some of the technologies that we were talking about externally for, like, the bus shelters, but also inside the vehicles. That goes for a passenger account, our reader, because as we are fare-free, we also still have to count the passengers. So that's a new technology that actually does it for us. So we could do away with human error or have something to validate those counts back off of for our solar reimbursement and other federal dollar reimbursement with that. That also has to deal with our announcement center that will couple with our routing and planning software that we're working with UCTC on to procure that. This will allow for, as required by law, when we come to standard stops, that the announcement will go off alerting passengers that we have this stop there. Other pieces of it deals with the display signage, standardizing that throughout the fleet of what we have there so people know what's there. Where we are.
It's not on this. I do want to just go back on one last thing, but I don't know if someone else has something on this. So, it was page 50-something, hold on, way back. We didn't do it because it's already page 52, the Environment Reuse Innovation Center Planning Study. I just wanted to point out, I'm grateful that this is in the works and in the process, but it's a planning study to look into the implementation and construction of.
Yes.
And so we've only got the planning, like there's nothing else extrapolated out, so I just want to be thoughtful about that. I don't want to speak out of both sides of my mouth. I know I don't normally want to see it, but you've done it in all the rest, so I feel a little left out here. Don't do it, but I just want to make sure we're all on the same page.
We don't have an idea.
We don't know yet.
And it, like, this is really would be really hard for us to even
throw
an estimate.
I'm just reminding everyone that this wasn't meant to stop with just the look into it. I'm saying it out loud on the record that the intention is that we're going to continue down the path and we'll see
our
what
other
comes back.
Question was, like, are we doing this study and doing all of this to, like, hand over to the RRA, or is this going to be something in the county plan? There was just a lot of open questions.
So we need to have those.
You and I still need to have our...
Yeah, we do. So again, I just wanted to highlight it.
But that's a
anything else? All right, for Ways and Means, can I get a motion to adjourn?
I make that motion.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Madam Chair, I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Thank you, Legislative Second. I second.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, good job.